So it's another cold opening here for the Horn. I wish it were otherwise, but I said I was going to wait until the weekend. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the chat room conversation. You know the usual, unless you're brand new to the program. If you're brand new to the program, we'd love to have you in the chat room. Go on. Well, I mean, if you're not new to the program, I'm a little scatterbrained right now because I've been up to my neurons in annoying tech for the better part of last night and into today. But with any luck at all, well, I think I need to put a little more juice behind the. Yeah, okay. Because in a minute I'm going to get emails saying, "Bob, I can't hear you." Well, that's because I took everything back to zero and started so the mic has no EQ on it. None of the channels have any EQ on it. I got this thing up and running just a few minutes ago after swearing and sweating and screaming and carrying on for about the last, all day today and part of last night after the program ended. Because I'm desperate to get, among other things, I want to get some playback. And I don't know, maybe I'm beginning to think it's a sound card problem and not a mix desk problem. Hard to say, though. Anyway, we're managing to have a program, and whether you've been there before or not, we'd love to have you in the chat room. Come on by, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, HeadOn.live, jump in there. Anatole and Steve from New York and VT Blom are all itching, and as am I, itching to welcome you to the conversation, the Madcap Multimedia Merry Zany Wacky Screwball Multimedia Extravaganza that takes place during the hours in which this program is live. Yes, absolutely. And, just come on by. It's easy. There's Little Thunder, who will welcome you as well. And, of course, it is the 17th day of August, 2018. We are more than halfway past, we're more than halfway to the, wait, what? Okay, I got nothing. Maybe Ace is just screwing with me. Hot on both streams, your levels seem very loud and clear on HeadOn.live, but really low on the White Rose Society stream. Well, thank you. Lee in New York says, considering the usual temperatures in West Virginia in August, a cold opening sounds comfortable. Well, make no mistake, it's not too bad in here, really. It's 76 degrees. It's making for some chilly naked radio this evening, but enjoyable nonetheless. Well, at least for me. That's why there's no video here. The same audio output goes to both of the stream interfaces, so I got no idea why the levels are low on White Rose, but okay on HeadOn.live. Okay, Little Thunder can barely hear you on HeadOn.live. Well, you're going to have to turn it up, Little Thunder, because things are all screwed up here. Loud and clear in Oz, though. Well, thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly. It's good to know. it's Friday on the front porch. I have already ascertained with Sparky that everything works there. That's a blessing. Again, no EQ on any of the channels, no compression, no nothing. So, if you're going to send emails saying about how terrible, well, it's ancient equipment, and there's no EQ on it, and I'm at my wit's end right now. Because for the life of me, I can't get any playback out of the sound card in the computer. It's weird. The sound card shows me internally that it's hearing it. But, hey, maybe I'll drive to Beckley and buy more cables tomorrow. And tequila. Or gin. Or wood alcohol. It's a little frustrating. A very little frustrating. So here's where we are at the end of the week, just so you'll know. We closed the evening last night at the end of the program with a goose egg and $624 to raise. But things got a little bit better because Karen out in California heard and answered and kicked in to the challenge that was on the table, courtesy of Larry from Liberalville. And so instead of having a $100 challenge from Larry from Liberalville this evening, we have an $80 challenge and a fundraising goal to finish the week of $607. Okay. Asa says, let us chip in and buy you a new damn mixer already. Pick one on Amazon. Right now, it may not be a mixer problem, Asa. I mean, I'm not kidding. It may not be. This is the frustration of, well, never, anyway, we'll see. Just bear with me. So anyway, we've got a $607 fundraising goal. That's the hard part. Here's the better part. Larry in Liberalville's challenge is $80, and Chris in Germany reached out and put a $100 challenge on the table. So if we meet those two challenges, that'll account for $360 out of the 607, leaving only $247 to go. So, thanks, Ralphs. Ralph says, you're pretty quiet on TuneIn. Well, TuneIn's through the White Rose Society stream, and if I... Whoa, yeah, okay, so turn that down. Yeah. So if I do that, I'll probably blow the doors off of the people listening on HeadOn.live. Maybe I don't have to do that. Let's see if that makes any difference. Maybe that'll make things a little bit better. But anyway, we've got $180 in challenges, matching challenges, doubling challenges is what I ought to call it, because those challenges are there, and what you kick in gets doubled by Larry from Liberalville and Chris in Germany. And that's huge. So thank you to Larry. Continuing thanks, and thanks. Continuing thanks to Chris in Germany for helping us to take some of this misery down. You know, of course, how to deal with it. Go to HeadOn.live. There's a PayPal button there, yada, yada, yada. The mailing address is also on the website. Okay, whatever you did made things a lot better. Well, what I did, and he says, I boosted the output to both HeadOn.live and White Rose Society, and I cranked up the gain a little bit on my mic, but there's a lot more air conditioner noise. Jesus. It's been a long day. Noise in the background. One of these days we'll have an engineering staff. Yay. And maybe a computer engineering staff, too, so I can figure out what is going on with the sound card. So that's where we stand. We've got, again, $607, and we've got to raise this evening $180 in matching challenges. And we have thanks to send out. Because we do have a couple of subscribers on this day of the month. Subscription thanks go out to partial sponsors of the program, Nancy in New York. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you very kindly to Arthur out in Arizona. Thank you, Arthur. And thank you very kindly to Laborman out in far New Mexico. Thank you, Laborman. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And Laborman's in the chat room, so is Ralph's. Ralphs responded to the challenge. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. So that means $150 in challenges remain on the table. And that having been said, I'll shut up about fundraising, and hopefully we'll get into the heart of the matter and the meat of the program. There's a lovely idea. Robert in Australia says, it sounds great here. Could everyone just move to Oz? I'll bet you there'd be a lot of hands raised saying, I'm game. But then again, Roberts also sent us emails talking about just exactly what's going on down there. And, well, you know, when we sneeze here, they get the flu in Australia because right-wing disease apparently metastasizes across the Pacific Ocean, contrary to the rotation of the Earth or something like that. Thank you, Don, in West Tennistan. Sound level, that's what it needed. All better now. Goody. Well, I'll play with it more over the weekend. And I will not rest until I've sorted out what in the told Prezalecka is going on with the playback, because I miss my intro and I miss being able to play sound clips. By the way, Labor Man just said, hey, there's another $100 challenge on the table. So that makes 250 that are waiting to be responded to. That would knock down all but $107 of the week's deficit and make More In Monday a lot less painful experience. Thank you, Labor Man. Thank you very, very kindly. And by the way, Scott in San Diego says, don't forget, members of the Horn Family Community Congregation can help with fundraising and own a hunk of the late Punky the Cockatiel in the form of one of his lost feathers. They were not plucked subsequently. I remind you, they were not plucked subsequent to his pining for the fjords. They just fell off once in a while, and Scott actually saved them through the years. And I think that's really sweet. And so if you would like a memento of Punky, a real live genuine cockatiel feather shippable only in the United States, well, your $21 contribution, A, gets matched, and B, gets you a Punky the Cockatiel feather. But you have to send me your mailing address, and then I will provide it to Scott, who will then mail the feather to you. Okay? I think that's really neat. I mean, and I can tell you, it's kind of cool having a Punky feather in the studio here. Scott continues and says, our late lamented little feathered friend made provision for this in his will, and the supply is definitely limited. So don't miss your chance to have a memento of Punky and help keep the Head On Radio Network around in these critical times. Thank you, Scott. Thank you very, very kindly. So that takes care of all the housekeeping, and we've only gone through 13 minutes of the program. We'll start Friday on the front porch here in about 45, 47 minutes or so. You know the rules on that. Not rules. We don't do a lot of rules around here. We're not rule-oriented. But, yeah, if you want to participate in Friday on the front porch and you never have sent a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype, then you need to send one to him. If you have, just sort of send him a message and say, hey, I want in. Sparky is busily adding participants to the conversation even as we speak. And we'll find out. The beauty of Friday on the Front Porch is we find out what's on your mind as opposed to what's on mine. I get to do what's on my mind most of the week. So it can be most anything. Speaking of most anything, going back to last night, you know, Tracy called in, and Tracy's a dear friend and has been a dear friend for years and years now. And we had a lovely conversation about the passing of Aretha Franklin. And you just knew that somehow or another, some white winger would manage to screw it up. It was a sad enough day as it was. So necessarily, the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda had to make it worse. One of the oldest, most racist sayings among racist white people, and God knows there are a lot of them, and I prefer not to go into most of them. But one of the oldest and most racist sayings is, they all look alike to me. Okay? Well, it may be 2018 for the rest of America, but there at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, it's... I guess Jim Crow 1905. Now, NBC didn't have any problem getting the obituary details and the life details of Aretha Franklin right. CBS didn't have any problem. CNN didn't have a problem. MSNBC didn't have a problem. ABC didn't have a problem. Jesus, Nick at Night probably didn't have a problem. MTV didn't have a problem. BET didn't have a problem. Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, however, they had a problem. Yeah, what kind of problem did they have? Well, when they put up the notice of the passing of the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, they used a photograph of Patti LaBelle. No, really, they did. And then some minor editorial functionary put out an apology saying, "Yeah, we're terribly sorry. It was just an honest mistake." I mean, look, one black lady sing is the one black lady singer, another black lady singer, tomato, tomato. But then again, that's hand in hand with, you know, the what did the Obamas say, that she had a touch of the divine. The Clintons said she was a national treasure, and the Chlamydia Claudia said she used to work for me. See, this is where I miss my playback, because I could cue up Mr. Spicoli saying, "You dick." Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just a little bit of a follow-up. And all kinds of stuff to go into this. Of course, and how much time we want to waste on it, I don't know. Geezer Disgustus had a little meltdown on the south lawn of the White House today, blathering on and on and on about the conflicts of interest of Robert Mueller, which of course don't exist, and bemoaning the trial of Paul Manafort. Yeah, it's very sad. It's a very sad day. I think the whole Manafort trial is very sad. When you look at what's going on there, I think it's a very sad day for our country. He worked for me for a very short period of time, you know, just like Aretha Franklin. He happens to be a very good person. I think it's very... I added the just like Aretha Franklin part, just so we know. He happens to be a very good person. I think it's very sad what they've done to Paul Manafort. Done to Paul Manafort. Well, bust my buttons. And here I was thinking that he was being tried for things that he had done. You know... financial crimes, fraud. But he went on and he said, Bob Mueller has a lot of conflicts also directly. You know that Mr. Mueller is highly conflicted. In fact, Comey is like his best friend. I could go into conflict after conflict. Sadly, Mr. Mueller is conflicted. Let him write his report. We did nothing. There's no collusion. Well, you know, dumbass, yeah, there's collusion. And let's be clear. There is no crime out there called collusion. This is one of those things where they've done a fairly superior job of misdirection. There's not a crime out there called collusion. There is a crime out there called conspiracy to commit a felony. And there's a crime out there called obstruction of justice. And there's a crime out there called tampering with witnesses, all of which may be found upon a fairly leisurely search of the United States Code. But the fact of the matter is, collusion itself, there's no question about it. Because when you take a meeting, because someone, namely a Russian, has, and someone tied to the Russian government, has offered you dirt on your political opponent, and you take that meeting, bing, you're colluding. Now, does that rise to the level of a conspiracy to commit a felony? I'd argue that it does. But there is no argument whatsoever that it is collusion. But collusion, no collusion, that's on a permanent loop being sung by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir of spirochetes inside Julius Geezer's rapidly degenerating what used to be a brain. But no, Bob Mueller and James Comey are not, Robert Mueller and James Comey are not fast friends. They don't get together every day down at the D.C. Racquet Club and play a few matches of handball or racquetball or squash or no. They don't get together and scrapbook on the weekends. They don't go to the flea market together or go antique shopping or you know, like Brett Kavanaugh, they don't live at the ballpark there where the Washington Nationals play. In point of fact, I think I saw an article that said those two men have dined together maybe twice, had lunch twice. Their spouses were with them for a couple of them. One was right after Comey became FBI director, and Mueller had dinner with him just to give him a heads up on what was. But this is, you know, this is the kind of lies and misdirection that the right wing spreads, the white wing. Comey is like his best friend. No, you freaking liar, he's not. But it's just another lunatic day in Washington, D.C. And any day anywhere near Donald J. Trump is going to be a lunatic day. See, that would be a great bumper if I had playback right now. We could play Lunatic Fringe. Mm-hmm. But even the bit about Paul Manafort not working for him for very long. You know, he just worked for me for a little bit. I barely knew who he was. Well, 5 months. And he wasn't, you know, some little schlub who was licking envelopes. He was the manager of the campaign. And they were closely connected. But not anymore. Donald J. Trump probably wouldn't even recognize Paul Manafort if he saw him on the street. But he will recognize him when it's time to pardon him. The question is, does he pardon him after this trial if there's a guilty verdict? Or does he pardon him after the next trial if there's a guilty verdict? Kind of got to wait and see, I guess. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to play catch up with over the course of the evening tonight, and just in my personal little filibuster. Among them, well. This account, via the Daily Beast, is this earth-shattering news? No. Is it further evidence of just how far down the rabbit hole we are gone as a country? Yes. Now, I know, for instance, that we have a number of Vietnam and Vietnam-era veterans in the Horn Family Community Congregation. An even larger group is probably that number of the Horn Family Community Congregation who have seen Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. Well, apparently, back in 2017, you know, we say back in 2017 because it feels a million years ago, but in March of 2017, having put Omarosa Manigault Newman in charge of liaison to veterans, because she was such an awesome communicator, well, there was a meeting. Julius Geezer met with the leaders of several veterans organizations because the veterans organizations felt that putting Omarosa, a person who had never served in the military and wouldn't know left face from shoulder arms, in charge of liaison and communications with veterans, well, they deemed it to be kind of insulting. No, they deemed it to be really insulting. And so, again, on March 17th, 2017, they got together for a meeting with the American Legion, Vietnam Veterans of America, American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and even the rightward-tilted group Concerned Veterans for America. Also in the meeting were Stephen Miller and Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer and Omarosa. They were all at a big table. And so because he's a deal maker and because he's a business typhoon, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini began going around the room asking the various people from the various veterans organizations what they were working on and what help he could be to them. Okay. Well, eventually the conversation came around to a fellow by the name of Rick Weidman. Rick Weidman is a co-founder of Vietnam Veterans of America. And he said, this all comes from a pair of anonymous sources who were in the room, because that's the only way we can get news anymore, because he's a vindictive little, petty little martinet of a punk, Trump is. Two sources in the room who were who wanted anonymity in speaking to the Daily Beast said that Weidman brought up Agent Orange, as well it should be brought up, because the Agent Orange problem is far from solved in, among Vietnam veterans. Now, the use of Agent Orange was, of course, a war crime for which no one was ever held accountable. And far more Vietnamese were poisoned by Agent Orange than U.S. service personnel. But U.S. service personnel were certainly poisoned by Agent Orange. And Mr. Weidman's concern was that access to Agent Orange treatment, benefits, for a larger number of people, it was a key issue for him. Well, when he mentioned Agent Orange, and there's no small, because the goddess of irony misses nothing with this clown. When he mentioned Agent Orange, and he himself being Agent Orange, that's why so many of our references to him include things that are orange. Comrade Kumquat, the Tangerine Tiberius, the Clementine Claudius. Clementine Caligula, Chlamydia Claudius. Yeah, I prefer Clementine Caligula, to, and then, because Chlamydia Claudius, just alliteration, right? Maybe he thought he was being insulted. You know, he doesn't miss out on all of this stuff. Because all Donald Trump is a petty, vindictive, venal little wad of grievance. That's all he's ever been. And at the mention of Agent Orange, the spirochetes, it kicked in, and he said to Rick Weidman, "Oh, that's taken care of." And this immediately engendered a response from about every veterans group at the table, who told him that no, the VA had not made nearly sufficient progress on the Agent Orange issue. And because he has a failing and fragmented and hollowed out brain, Donald Trump responded by saying, "Agent Orange, that's that stuff from that movie, right?"
What, Edith, huh?
And it became clear then that he was talking about Apocalypse Now. And he was talking about napalm. And no, the various veterans group leaders said, no, that wasn't Agent Orange. That was napalm. To which the president of the United States, not to put too fine a point on it, responded, "No, it was that stuff from that movie." 'Cause see, for the most part, Vietnam is a movie. To Comrade Kumquat, Vietnam is a myth. Vietnam is something to be compared to. Just as he told Howard Stern that the 1990s, when he was sticking his wee winky in anything that would slow down long enough for him to do that with, was his sexual Vietnam. Right? So it Vietnam does not have its independent reality because he never had to see it, because he had bone spurs. Yeah. And people kept trying to tell him, no, that's not it. And then, according to this Daily Beast story, he once again went one by one around the room. "You over there, Stephen Miller, was it napalm or Agent Orange?" "Oh, definitely Agent Orange, sir. Yeah, dropped by Mexicans." I don't know why Stephen Miller always sounds like Smithers in my voice, but in my head, but he does. But he surveyed the veterans group leaders. Was it napalm or Agent Orange? Napalm or Agent Orange? Napalm or Agent Orange? And the last guy he came to was Weidman from Vietnam Veterans of America. And like his colleagues, he said, "No, sir, that was napalm, not Agent Orange." But he also said that he didn't care much for Apocalypse Now, and he thought it was a disservice to Vietnam veterans. At which point, and again, this is the kind of thing that happens among a couple of guys who have had too much Pabst Blue Ribbon on 50-cent draft night down at the Wings place, okay? Or maybe at the Legion. Maybe at the Legion Hall. This is not something that presidents engage in. This isn't something that even anybody who isn't intoxicated engages in. Chlamydia Claudius, of course, famously does not drink. But that, you know, down at the corner, down at the end of the bar, down at the corner, the two guys that nobody else is talking to. Oh, my God, it was Agent Orange. You don't know shit. You wasn't there. It's napalm. I know it. Everybody in here knows it's napalm. Don't say Vietnam. Don't say Nam. It's Vietnam to you. You wasn't there. I don't care about your trick knee. You wasn't there. And it was, too, napalm, dumbass. And then one hits the other, and they boil out into the parking lot, and the cops come. And... But no, this is happening in the White House now. That's where we are. And so, because he could not concede, because... The spirochetes have convinced him that he can never be wrong about anything, ever. He responded to Rick Weidman by saying, I think you just didn't like the movie. It's just because you didn't like the movie. And so the heartfelt concerns of the American Legion, the veterans of foreign wars, Vietnam veterans of America, concerned veterans of America, about the exposure of American service personnel to a deadly and toxic and cancer-causing chemical got lost among the flutterings of the spirochetes inside his hollowed-out mind and degenerated into a question of who likes versus who doesn't like Apocalypse Now. On the one hand, you could laugh, but you weep for the veterans who still desperately need and deserve benefits for exposure to Agent Orange. And then you begin to shiver in fear like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. When you remember that this is the President of the United States who, with a single order, holds the keys to life and death over virtually every person on this planet. Holy Jesus. And 90% of the Republicans in this country agree with him and agree with his policies and agree with him on trade and agree with him on the economy and agree with him on issues of race and ethnicity and agree with him on immigration and are okay if he doesn't know the difference between napalm and Agent Orange and doesn't know the difference between reality and a movie and couldn't find Vietnam on a map, a globe, or if it was tattooed on his ass. They're okay with it. And Paul Ryan's okay with it. And Bob Goodblatt's okay with it. And Trey Gowdy is okay with it. And Louis Asparagus Gohmert's okay with it. And Steve Cantaloupe's King is okay with it. And Martha Roby is okay with it. That loony blonde lady from Northern Tennessee, goodness, is okay with it. And Richard Shelby's okay with it. And Lindsey Graham is okay with it. And John Cornyn's okay with it. And Mitch McConnell's okay with it. I know, I'm wearing it out, but you get the idea. The President of the United States. And hey, here's the fun part. You know, you could probably have an intellectual discussion with Rick Weidman about apocalypse now and the fact that it's not necessarily about Vietnam. Vietnam is the setting. But what Francis Ford Coppola had always wanted to do was make a great movie out of Joseph Conrad's great book, Heart of Darkness. Because it is an astonishing piece of fiction. Unfortunately, Heart of Darkness takes place on a trip up the Congo. And had it been made directly from the book, it would not have had any sort of resonance or relevance. So he just transposed it onto Vietnam. Maybe that's the disservice that Apocalypse Now does to Vietnam veterans. For purposes of a filmmaker's art, it used Vietnam and the people who served there and the people who died there and the people who were maimed there as vehicles for Francis Ford Coppola's creative urge. And, you know, that's a conversation to be had, maybe down at the end of the bar, at the Legion Hall. But not in the middle of a conversation about American veterans who are desperately in need of something. And the whole thing took place because he doesn't have the first clue how to be president, and he doesn't know what he doesn't know. I mean, Jesus Christ, he doesn't even know, like I said, that Apocalypse Now came from Heart of Darkness because he's never read a goddamn book in his life. Maybe some of my equipment frustration is sneaking over into the larger conversation. If so, I apologize. Steve in New York says, wait a second now, Bob, don't slander PBR. That's the best cheap wheat beer around. Well, I'll take issue with you. At least around here, at 99 cents a can, your Labatt's Blue beats the tar out of PBR at $2.14 for a 24-ounce can. But that's just me. The subject line, the Demented Circus Peanut and Agent Orange, Scott in San Diego says, I could go either way on this one, Bob. Agent Orange equals Apocalypse Now. Well, napalm causes fire and fire's orange. On the other hand, Trump may have been thinking of the film Soylent Green. With that man and his spirochetes, who the hell can really know? No one. You know, only his spirochetes know for sure. Robert in Australia says, speaking of Vietnam vets, do Americans remember or even know that Australia was there in Vietnam standing shoulder to shoulder with the U.S. fighting evil communism? Because if we didn't stop it there, they'd be here in Australia in a flash. Well, that's the story we were told, says Robert. I grew up facing the draft here in Australia, or death lotto, as the Prime Minister's wife called it once. I missed the draft by 2 years, but plenty of young Australians didn't. 3,600 Australian servicemen died in Vietnam. Worth remembering. Very well. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Of course, the irony in that is that Hutton Gibson, father of Mel Gibson, moved his boy to Australia to keep his boy from having to serve in the armed forces of the United States. And that's how Mel Gibson came to be in Australia and came to be cast in the first Mad Max movie. And then was subsequently cast in Gallipoli, and went on to make They Were We Were Soldiers Once, about an American army unit, air cavalry in Vietnam. Again, the goddess of irony misses nothing. Okay, well, that's mighty big of you, Steve, in New York. I stand corrected. Labatt's are better. I think so. You know, and if you're desperate, you can even go for the Labatt's Ice, and that'll give you, you know, that's like a 5.6% alcohol beer, and you know, get where you're going a little bit quicker. Bill in Allentown, Apocalypse Now, don't apologize to us smart people, Bob. Marty says, I hope Francis Ford Coppola wasn't a trumpansy. Robert Duvall, I believe, was. I do believe Martin Sheen most certainly was not. Yeah, well, Duvall's a hardcore right-winger. Going back to Paul Manafort, a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. The fact that the jury in the Manafort trial is taking this long gives me pause. No defense put forth from Manafort's team would suggest that no defense could be mounted. On another note, Ron Johnson, R., Wisconsin, was on the Devil's Advocates and said that he's working on a replacement for the ACA, which consists of block grants to the states. Oh, goody, because the states are better able to determine the health needs of their citizens. That worked out so well in Louisiana when Bobby Jingo Django Jindal was governor. Just because it doesn't work a dozen times doesn't mean it won't work ever. But it does work, Ron. That's the whole thing with block grants. They work great. You give a bajillion dollars to a state to provide health care to the citizens of the state, and then because it's a block grant and the state can do any damn thing it wants to with it, the governor spends it on contracts with his cronies, and everything's cool. See how it works? Hey, before we start Friday on the front porch, let's run over and check in on the phones. I don't know who we've got, but hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Darlene.
Well, hey, Darlene. How are you? Sorry I made you wait. I kind of got lost in my rant. I apologize.
That's okay. I don't know how long I can talk because a thunderstorm is coming, and my internet is taking a hit, no matter how many times I power off the modem and power back on, I keep dropping your program. But so sitting on the phone was actually good because I got to hear your program uninterrupted.
Oh, yay.
But the reason for the call is I am making an appeal to your listeners to contribute to the Horn and help chip away at, I think you said you have a $600 bill tonight.
Yeah.
And I certainly am in a position to make that kind of an appeal because I contribute a few $100 every month, and I'm a subscriber. And I want to talk about how important your program is to me personally. The type of work that I do, I'm a grant writer, and as you know, I have this week off, which is great. It's my first vacation all year. And the type of work I do is very intense, I'm always under pressure with deadlines. And you're lucky if by the end of the day I have two brain cells left to rub together. So, listening to your program, although I love keeping up on current events, there are days where I can't really do that. And I look to your program to kind of fill me in on the headlines and go in depth on certain stories that I may have missed or actually caught but didn't have enough time or, like I said, brain cells left to really think about it. And you have such a tremendous perspective on things. And you also, and we've talked about this, you've mentioned this plenty of times, about how your program is always way ahead of the curve. You predicted that Trump would win the election. You were dead on with that. And there are plenty of other things that you've mentioned over the years that actually happened, where you were a month to 6 months ahead of everyone else. And it's happened again because, yesterday Trump began the process of, because I'm very interested in what's going on with the intel community. I call, usually we talk a lot about that and what Robert Mueller is doing in his investigation. And yesterday, Trump, of course, revoked the security clearance of John Brennan. And a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, on July 23rd, I sent you an email and that was entitled Reductio ad Absurdum, when that was the day that Trump brought up or launched the idea of pulling the security clearances of several, retired and fired intel chiefs. And I had surmised that it was possible that the actual objective was to go after Robert Mueller's a security clearance and what that might mean for the investigation. And lo and behold, yesterday, all of the very well-paid pundits like Rachel Maddow, the highly experienced 50 to 60 years worth of experience in intelligence, James Clapper, and Senator Democratic Senator Mark Warner pointed that out. And Clapper said, he started off with saying that, you know, what is Trump's end game with beginning with revoking John Brennan's security clearance? What is his end game? He said, what's to stop him from pulling the security clearances of Robert Mueller and his entire team, which would make them inoperable in terms of being able to carry on the special counsel investigation into Russian interference, because they need to have access to classified information. And Mark Warner, not long after, began to sound the alarm there in the Capitol, the nation's capital, too shocked to the, you know, surprise of some reporters that hadn't picked up on this. And then last night, Rachel Maddow finally figured it out and did a very in-depth discussion of that on her program. And I encourage Horn listeners to listen to it or to watch it. You can pick it up on YouTube. And the title of it is President Trump Isn't Attacking Critics, He's Going After Witnesses. And, you know, again, you inspire that because you read my email on your program. You didn't trash it, the idea or anything, and you talked about it a little bit, and then you mentioned it again later in the evening. And this is why the Horn is such an important forum for this kind of stuff, because we're calling it well ahead of all these well-paid individuals who should have probably picked up on this almost a month ago. And, John Brennan had said something about, even though James Clapper had referred to his security clearance as being more or less a courtesy, but that was really underplaying it and downplaying it, because Brennan had said yesterday that he was using his security clearance to go back to the CIA and look at a lot of his files that were highly classified. So in case he was called to testify, or in case, you know, whether it was in front of, say, the Senate or the House or whatever. Now, with this revocation, he can't do that. And the list that Trump had back in July, on the 23rd of July, was rather short. And that list has now grown. It's now grown to include Sally Yates and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. So he's going after everyone except maybe one or two people, but pretty much everyone, like 90-99% of the people on that list, are former Intel chiefs, former Intel and DOJ personnel who were all there and working during the 2016 investigation into the possible interference by Russia in the election, including James Brennan and Clapper and all of them, and that by systematically revoking their clearances, he's essentially shutting them up as witnesses, and he's moving towards Robert Mueller. I don't know about you, based on, you know, what you were just talking about with the whole Agent Orange thing, we know Trump is not smart enough to have figured this out on his own. And I'm thinking that there's one person who tipped him off to do it. Shall I give you a hint?
Oh, do please.
Apparatchik?
Well,
apparatchik?
Yeah, that would make sense. I was going to say Stephen Miller, though.
Well, okay.
I mean,
maybe.
He's the closest thing they have to an evil genius. But then again, Steve Bannon's on the phone with him constantly, even though he's out of the White House. But mm-hmm. I'm inclined to agree with you, Darlene.
Because we can speculate, right? Because we don't know what went on. behind closed doors in Helsinki. And if you look at the timing, right?
Oh, my God. It fits.
Exactly. Because I called you on July 16th because I was flipping out over the Helsinki disaster. Okay? And then barely a week later, I called you, I sent you the email on the 23rd, which is a week later. Okay? Where he decided, you know, and it clearly... even Brennan had said that these old communist kind, you know, and obviously Putin came up through the KGB. He is smart enough to do something like this, and would know this kind of tactic, and that would maybe tip him off because to do this because Brennan had said that he's seen this type of thing, you know, developing an enemies list. And, you know, Putin, of course, is not above killing, you know, intelligence officers that cross him. But typically, a lot of these despots and dictators and what have you will revoke security clearances and privileges of these intel officers to shut them down. Okay. And I'm wondering if, and again, this is a big conspiracy thing. This is all speculation, but what the hell, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we have a right to do it because we don't know what happened behind closed doors in Helsinki. But if you remember, who was the one that triggered this was Rand Paul.
Yes.
Rand Paul.
And he, of course, just got back from Russia himself.
Quid pro quo. You know, use Rand Paul as the one to launch the idea to kind of deflect from Trump and Putin, launch the idea of pulling the security clearances, right? And, oh, in exchange or in return, I'll write you an introductory letter so I can introduce you to Putin, okay? And whether or not that happened, I mean, this to me, this whole thing, it's like, you know how we talk about like the Star Trek reference? Well, this to me is like the Jaws reference, you know, because I think of
this
that
is not a boating accident.
Well, more so the scene where they've already tagged the shark. They've seen it. It has the barrels on it.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
No, they've roped up. They have the barrels and they've attached it to the back of the boat. And all of a sudden, the shark sticks its head out of the water and starts chewing through the line. And Roy Scheider, as Sheriff Brody, says something along the lines of, you know, look at him eating through that line. And Matt Hooper, the shark expert, says, yeah, he's working his way right up to us. And I see Trump as a shark. The line is all the intel chiefs that he's going to chew along the way. And Robert Mueller and his team are the ones sitting on the boat. They are the us. And unfortunately, you have, I think you referred to him as the nasty old man, Orrin Hatch.
Yes.
Right? Well, let's add three more to your list that you were saying before about that it's okay with them. Whatever Trump does, it's okay with them. He has a spirochete-ridden presidency. That nasty old man Orrin Hatch, that goober John Kennedy, who not the real Kennedy.
I called him a butthead. I saw him say that today, talking about James Clapper. He said, I called him a butthead.
Exactly. And that dolt Bob Corker, all pulling Brennan's security clearance and lambasted Brennan. And in so doing, they essentially played into Putin's hands. And are only going to further embolden Trump to continue revoking security clearances right on down the line. My guess is that Clapper or Comey is next. And, you know, here's another thing about Comey. I'm thinking, why didn't, you know, and this is why I don't think that Trump thought this up himself, that I think this was given to him by Putin or maybe even Stephen Miller or Bannon, whatever. Why wasn't McCabe's was, they missed that one. Trump missed that one. So now Comey's on the list to pull his security clearance, right? Because he could testify.
Well,
you know,
so, you know what? I agree with everything you're saying, Darlene, but I want to sort of drill down for a minute. Like I did, you had your cup of coffee in law school.
Yeah.
So, pardon the sound of the weed eater in the background. You is there any one? Is there any judicial recourse to this? Because I've been scratching my head for a couple of days now. It's not like Brennan can sue to get his. I mean, can he? Would it lie? Is there a cause of action there?
I thought I read an article somewhere where he might have it, maybe under the idea that it's a violation of his First Amendment right to free speech. But I think the conclusion was that the Supreme Court, there is a similar case, but it's not on point. But the thought,
well, is it also
particular article?
But you know, there are cases that say a civil servant's civil service status, that the civil servant has a property interest in their civil service rating. Now, again, not directly on point, but doesn't he? It's almost as though he has a property interest in that clearance because it makes him economically viable. And so what you've got there out of Trump's arbitrary and capricious action is a taking of property without due process of law, is it not?
That would be an interesting angle on it, you know, barring the fact that there are some who have been retired, who actually retired. I don't know if John Brennan is. Yeah, I think he did actually retire. Both he and Clapper got out.
Right, but
the
there's a, but there's a
Trump.
But there's
know,
a national.
There are others.
There's a national security interest for letting these retired officials keep their clearances in case they have to be. Because quite often in the intel community, if I understand correctly, just as an aside, Darlene, I get a little creepy defending the intel community. I
mm-hmm.
feel a little
yep.
icky about that.
Yep, I agree.
Beyond that, they are a bit of a fraternity and a sorority. And the most important thing in the intel community is continuity from one administration to the next. Because intel is supposed to be sort of politically neutral, even though a million times it hasn't been.
Right.
And so the purpose in a retired intel person hanging on to their clearance is so that they can go back in and be consulted. Now, the fact that
yes.
they if a person feels patriotically driven to say what he says. Well, you know, none of these things involved a breach of his intel. None of this involved Brennan breaching his intel agreements or oaths. He was simply speaking as the patriot that he is.
Correct. This was totally retaliatory and vindictive on Trump's part. But not totally. I'm thinking there's a deeper motive here.
And that would be
that he's actually trying to put the kibosh on Robert Mueller and the investigation.
Well, that would
by revoking these security clearances, that's ultimately what he wants to do, because you know he's delusional. Okay, he's a narcissist, and narcissists believe in their own paranoid delusions. And he, I think, truly believes that what Robert Mueller and his team are doing is in fact a rigged witch hunt in his mind, and that he has every right to shut down this rigged witch hunt. Which is why, you know, Hatch, Kennedy, Corker—they're all playing into that. That line of thinking by commending him for doing what he's doing.
Well, let me take this to a second question, though, Darlene. If indeed he does pull Mueller's security clearance, and if Mueller being Mueller is about petalite years. More intelligent than Donald Trump, and mm-hmm. and frankly, probably petalite years more intelligent even than sweet, cuddly, huggable, lovable Pootie.
Putin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one thing Pootie never has to contend with is a court system and an actual functioning constitution. Because when you're a tyrant and a dictator, you don't have to deal with that. You operate by tyrannical fiat.
Yep.
One of the things that you constantly hear, and we've talked about ever so much on this program, is you can't indict a sitting president. Well, knowing what he knows and knowing as much as he knows, could this conceivably push, corner Robert Mueller into doing what he otherwise had not planned to do? Because the question I'm getting at is, can a nominally legal act transform itself into an illegal act by virtue of the intent of the person performing the act? In other words, if you perform a legal act with a criminal mens rea, will that transform it into a criminal act?
On whose part? Mueller?
No, on Trump's. So if his goal is to illegally shut down an investigation and to obstruct witnesses and intimidate witnesses with these security clearance shenanigans, can that constitute attempting to impede the investigation? Because impeding an FBI investigation is a damn crime.
Yes, I think this is classic. I think this is obstruction of justice. I think this is obstruction. And as he continues down the line, he's going to become more emboldened as he continues to ax each person, working his way right up to Mueller. I mean, I suppose the quickest way around all of this to prevent this is, because Warner started. He rang the alarm yesterday in Congress, in the hallways to some reporter was like, oh, you think Trump would do that? It's like, yeah, I wouldn't put anything past his administration. Would this be serious enough for Republicans and Democrats to pass a bill to specifically protect the security clearances of Robert Mueller and his team for as long as, Robert Mueller is the special counsel? That would seem to be the quickest way to protect him, because it's going to take time to go through a court system. But the question is
right, and of course, the president cannot pull a security clearance for someone who is not in the executive branch. There's an argument to be made that by virtue of being an independent counsel or a special prosecutor, that his clearance should be outside the purview of the president's ability to pull. But
right.
But to test that in court, could the Senate confer upon him a security clearance sufficient to, and would Mitch McConnell sit still for that?
Yeah, I who knows? They shouldn't.
I mean, this is beginning to feel more and more, Darlene, like a race. That the higher the pressure builds inside the little pressure cooker that is the head of Donald Trump, the closer to whistling that the tea kettle gets.
Oh yeah.
The more danger Robert Mueller is in, and I'm not just using danger sort of generically. I wouldn't put it past Trump to look at Pootie and say, couldn't you get him one of those polonium pellets?
That's frightening. The thought of that is pretty frightening.
Well, it is, but I'm convinced, Darlene, that that's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that I've been there for a very long time, and the reason these highly paid journalists say things like, "Do you think he'd really do that?" is because they have a commitment to believing in Tinkerbell that you and I out here in the Horn Family Community Congregation does not have to have, especially in light of, in the face of evidence that Tinkerbell has breathed her last.
Yeah.
It's like one of the little pukes that shows up on, I hate that word, but still, who shows up on Morning Joe, my filthy habit. I don't know if you, Noah Rothman? He's just this little guy that shows up with like Reagan levels of Brill Cream in his hair, and he so desperately wants to defend Donald Trump, but he knows that half of the people around that table would treat him like a hockey puck in front of the net if he did. And he tried, I think it was yesterday, he said, he always has this sort of supercilious air about him. He said, Brennan became impure when he became political. And for once in his life, I thought John Heilman was actually going to get pissed. And he slapped back at him. And right. and so did Heidi Prisbilla, and I think so did Casey Hunt.
Yeah.
But there's a profound urge out there to just let the dictator do what the dictator wants to do.
Exactly. Yep. And again, he believes that this is a rigged witch hunt, and he's convinced, he's slowly convincing more and more Americans, as you say, never underestimate the stupidity of the American people. He's convincing more and more Americans to sour on the Mueller investigation, when it really is one of the last avenues we have for truth. You know, even if nothing comes of it, well, I mean, things have come of it, but in terms of getting Trump out of office, at least we will have the truth. And that's why I think it's vital that it continue. And if they don't do something to protect him and the investigation, because, again, you know, Clapper has 50, 60 years in intelligence. And he said, it sounds like Trump could feasibly revoke not only Mueller's clearance, but that of the entire team that's under him, the 17 attorneys. And if they don't have access to classified files, the operations of that investigation has come to a halt.
Well, I'm beginning to believe
something
that
doesn't happen. It's like the, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. You please.
It's like the Kobayashi Maru. You know, I come back to that again. There's a Star Trek reference. It's like the perfect thing. It's like the perfect way of shutting this whole thing down. And one of the things about Brennan, and I appreciate what he does, and he's made it very clear that he's not going to relent. You know, it's very, very similar to McConnell going after Elizabeth Warren, and, you know, yet she still persisted as she persisted. You know, he's not going to give up. He's going to continue forward. But when you're dealing with somebody who's a narcissist, they always up the ante on you.
Oh yeah. Without it, without a doubt. I mean, and that's what leads me to think that having a pocket indictment, you know, basically, since we were talking about Vietnam earlier, you know, tripwires in the perimeter. Is about the only protection that Mueller has.
Yeah, ultimately, because we can't rely on Congress to do the right thing and agree on some sort of bill to protect him. You talk about a race. Well, yeah, there's definitely going to be a race because we're coming up on the elections, and if things change in the House and the Senate, then Trump could be in a lot more trouble, and he's not going to want to wait until then. But in order to beat somebody like Trump at his game, you have to be pretty seriously fucked up yourself. Where basically, you know, because dealing with a person who's narcissistic like that, they keep upping the ante. You have to keep upping the ante. You know, and we're seeing this already with him and Brennan. Like, Brennan's now coming back. Trump's going to come back, and they're going to keep going. And you get to a point, if you're a sane, healthy-minded human being, which clearly Brennan is more so than Trump, there's going to come a point in time where you realize that you're not going to win against somebody like this, you know, in terms of the back-and-forth stuff, because Trump's always going to up the ante. And, you know, we have interference. I think we have interference beyond Bannon and Miller and all. I think we've got the foreign interference because, you know, I wouldn't put it past Putin to have suggested this.
It makes more sense than I it's kind of terrifying to give that credence, but I don't see how we can just simply dismiss it, Darlene.
Exactly. And your program, again, we were ahead of this, you know, by at least a month. And quite frankly, you deserve the high pay that, you know, that Clapper and Rachel Maddow, who finally figured it out yesterday, you know, what they get. And yet Horn listeners can hear all of this for cents on the dollar. This is valuable information that we're all listening to every night with your program. And so, you know, again, getting back to that, my hope is that people will help chip away at your $600 deficit for tonight, because, you know, I'm excited that, you know, usually you're always doing this. You're always doing it. You're always figuring it out. You're always ahead of the curve. And every once in a while, I get a good idea, and I was like, oh, for once, you know, I was able to come up with something like this and say, yeah, you know, to have it confirmed. But a month later, to me, it's like, wow. And that's because of you too, because you always look at things from different angles and different perspectives. And it kind of keeps my foot a little bit in the law, because I haven't practiced in like 20 years. But like you said, you know, I had my cup of coffee as well as you in law school.
Fascinating. And what they teach you there, realistically, what they teach you there is anything but how to be a lawyer. How to be a lawyer, you learn in courtrooms and boardrooms and offices and depositions and stuff like that.
Exactly.
What you learn in law school is a particular kind of analytical thinking. That's why, you know, there are said to be two groups that do great in law school: English majors and engineers.
Yep.
For similar and yet divergent reasons, both are analytical in different ways. And if you apply that analysis, if you apply law school-y kind of stuff to it, it's like the debate over whether a sitting president can be indicted. I mean, I find the whole notion that a sitting president cannot be indicted to be sophistry on the worst level.
Exactly. It's like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, where did you find that? And you have to pretend things in order to believe that.
We're seeing that on the Supreme Court level.
Well, right, and the problem is they're willing to engage in all manner of fantasy as long as they can continue to advance their right wing agenda. That's why I say that one of the smartest, most dangerous right wingers in this country is John Roberts.
John Roberts.
I mean, yeah. he's scary, spooky, evil smart. I mean, he's petting the cat on his lap smart, okay?
Yeah.
But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't make the Dr. Evil mistakes.
Yeah.
I want to thank you though for the kind words. You know, I don't sit around craving it or anything. But I set out to do, you know, for this community to be something, and to be something more than entertainment. You know, God knows we clown around, but when it's time to get serious, we get brutally serious.
Right, and you always give an audience to our ideas. You know, you didn't dismiss my email or that it was some crazy idea about what Trump might really be doing. You read it and you took it seriously. And now we have people echoing this, and we were a month ahead on this, on this whole idea. And that's what the Horn does all the time. You do that all the time. So, again, you know, I your program is so instrumental to me personally. I look forward to it every evening, and, you know, there are days where it's like, oh, great, I'm listening to Bob. I'm going to catch up on the news because I didn't have a chance to delve into things. And there are headlines that you bring up that I completely missed. And then the discussions from the listeners and their input, is just unparalleled. This is not something that you find or hear anywhere else, and that I'm appreciative of. And again, people, horn listeners, it's only for a few cents on a dollar. It's well worth it.
Having 400 subscribers is a dream. At $10 a month, and you know that's that quarter of a cup of coffee that I keep talking about. But this evening, you know, just as you put forward a challenge the other night, this evening we got $250 worth of challenges on the table, courtesy of Chris and courtesy
cool.
of Laborman and courtesy of Larry in Liberalville. And $250 worth of challenges. And if that and that makes money, that makes contributor money go a lot further, you know, twice as far, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And so I hope people will take your words to heart, and hopefully it means more coming from them or coming from you than it means coming from me, because I constantly talk about it. And Darlene, it drives me bananas to talk about it.
I know. I know. That's why I called in. I said, hey, I got to help you out, because I know you're very humble about that, and you don't like talking about it. Every once in a while, you get a caller in or somebody in that pitches in for you and says, you know, make a contribution. This is very, very important. Because it seems like a lot of times, you know, we're just the news, everything is so depressing and disappointing, and you just feel like, you know, you're taking it up the ass basically every day. By what's squatting in the White House, masquerading as president. But the information that comes through your program is empowering. It's vital to know this stuff.
And in a way, it's you know, you deal with what happens. But I've found, Darlene, that one of the things that's hardest is wondering what happens next. And I guess I get a little solace out of trying to tease out those threads just so that I won't be quite so gobsmacked when it happens.
And shocked when it happens. Yep.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there's no boundaries.
By the way, you got a wee little tiny bit of pushback from Steve in New York, having mentioned his student loans last night from law school. Steve says, sorry, man. In law school, they teach you how to sign your name on numerous promissory notes. Well, that's true, too. And James in Illinois says, no one is yet paying Bob not to figure this stuff out. Maybe that's part of it. Where's the fun? Because God knows people like Bill Kristol, you know, that sucker's not even like a stopped clock. He's not even right twice a day. And he's a bajillionaire for it. You know.
Right, exactly. The level of analysis is in the crapper. Quite frankly, and you know, that's not what we have here. You know, and I appreciate your comments about law school. Like, I was very much like you. Law school I found it very tedious, and I'm like, why am I putting myself through this? And I would have certain areas that I would do really well in. Like, I did really well in criminal law, criminal procedure, believe it or not, SEC law.
You sound like me, and then there were courses where you just had to cattle prod yourself into the classroom every day.
Right.
Because
and just,
you
like,
just
I had
hated
nothing.
It.
Yeah. I mean, I had nothing left for property law. Nothing.
Oh,
nothing
you know, that's so funny
that
you would mention that.
Brave.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny you would mention that, though, because Agnes and I were sitting the other day. And I tried to, and what I told her, we were talking about a totally unrelated topic. I said, but if somebody's out there saying, oh, I'm a lawyer, or oh, I've been to law school,
mm-hmm.
all you got to do, if you think you're being bullshitted, work the rule against perpetuities into the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And if the mere mention of the rule against perpetuities doesn't cause anguished howls or at least one good Jesus Christ, not that, then you're being bullshitted. Because
exactly.
That person, yeah. Because sooner, it's arcane, it's antiquated, and sooner or later, is there a law school in the country where you don't have to cope with that thing?
No.
And it's like the first semester of calculus. You know, it's just incomprehensible. And
right, exactly.
And so it'll, you know, that's one of those things, you know, if you're ever in a bar, you know, the Horn Family Community Congregation, you know, just tuck this one away. Kind of like the greatest baseball trivia question of all time. What's the one record that will probably, the one record in baseball that will never be broken? Or statistically is less likely to be broken than any other record. Tuck that. You got that in your back pocket. You're good for a beer. Well, it's the same thing with the rule against perpetuities.
Yep. Yeah. Property law was not my strong suit. Of course, I was very young. Just came out of college, and I was scared to death because you know there were some schools that were worse than others with the Socratic method. You know, and you always think you're going to do worse than you actually did, you know, but I just, oh, my God.
Well, I came to it after a couple of years in journalism. And so I guess I had a little bit of an attitude. And when they started talking Socratic method, I had this one terrible professor and I didn't, you know, go right at him. But I said, you know, prof, the problem with the Socratic method is that in order to be effective, it requires a Socrates. And I ain't seen anybody showing up around here in togas. So, you know, you'll have that.
Yeah.
But, Darlene, I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, and I thank you again so much for the kind words. And I hope we can continue to be out, you know, be so far out in front of the curve that it's like being on straight road. I've been watching the turkey thing, and just like you were suggesting that Pooty probably told him to, you know, pull clearances. The minute that I heard the turkey thing happen, I immediately thought of, you know, the fact that Russia is the heir to the ancient Byzantine Empire, that the remnants of the Byzantine Empire, you know, sort of found their way north to Moscow, the double-headed eagle, all of that crap, the Black Sea, the Bosporus, the Dardanelles. And I immediately thought, I bet I know somebody who would like to have unfettered access to the Mediterranean via the Black Sea through the Bosporus and the Dardanelles. Who could that possibly be? And once again, you know, that guy. And so, lo and behold, there was no need for Trump to do what he did with Turkey. There was no need whatsoever. And in fact, we know by previous conduct that he's kind of fond of autocratic dictatorial strongmen like Erdogan.
Yes.
So why start that problem? Well, because it drives Turkey, because Turkey, relative to NATO, has always driven Russia crazy, because it makes them very nervous to have Turkey there controlling the Bosporus and the Dardanelles, and you get the idea. So guess who is now running to the warm and loving arms, the warm and loving embrace of huggable, lovable, cuddly Pooty Poot? Why, yes, Mr. Erdogan is, because of what Donald Trump did. That's a freaking set piece, Darlene.
Yes, it is. Yep. That NSA analyst said that they've known all along that Trump is a Russian agent.
I'm beginning to think I need to read this what's his name, Craig Unger, this book that's out.
Yeah, the one that said from the 1980s that he's, when he was still married to Ivana Trump, and he went over there. Yeah, that they've been grooming him since the 80s.
And that's not at all unusual for the Russians.
No, this is,
they play a long game
playbook. Yeah, absolutely within the playbook. I think it is. Yeah.
Well, by the way, you mentioned something about having been on vacation.
Yeah, I went to New Hampshire for a few days. Which was nice. It was nice. I went up with my ex-boyfriend's daughters, who consider me their stepmom, and got to visit his eldest daughter, who I haven't seen in a year, and reconnected with all of them, which was great.
Nice.
And just, you know, I was going to meet some friends for dinner, for lunch today, but we're supposed to be getting storms in. I said, I don't want to be driving in that. And I certainly don't want to be dealing with Frontier, because my internet's all screwed
up.
Oh,
lucky you.
Something happened from a storm. So I said, I'm going to wait till Monday. I mean, the drawback is that I'm struggling to keep your program on the air, but I'll just deal with it, because that's not how I want to spend my vacation, dealing with Frontier. But it was nice. It was nice going up to New Hampshire. It was a really pretty ride and nice area, and it was good to get away for a while. Yeah, it was good.
That would be. And now you're happily back home in the Nutmeg State and waiting for the glories of autumn.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, we're supposed to have a warm autumn, they said. So I heard that today. So that should be interesting, and I probably really should try to take a break from all the political stuff going on, but you know, it's hard, because I do find it interesting and aggravating at the same time, you know, I'm sure you heard what's her name there, Elizabeth Warren's speech at Netroots Nation, where she talked about the three reasons why we're struggling as Americans to get our government to listen to us.
She didn't pull any punches.
Know. No, she did not. She didn't. And I'll tell you, Cory Booker, he gave quite an impassioned speech. He really, it was fascinating listening to him as well.
There was something interesting out of those, you know, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren. I was surprised Kirsten Gillibrand wasn't there, but Elizabeth Warren's people wanted nothing to do with the hoi polloi.
It's like, what the hell was that all about?
Neither did Kamala Harris's.
Yeah, no surprise.
Cory Booker worked the convention hall.
Good for him.
The takeaway on that is that I think he probably has, and maybe it's because he came up through other political offices, I think he's got a better handle on the meaning and the value of what we call retail politics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, he admitted his, which I thought was very, I thought that was very touching and very human of him when he told a story about the young boy that used to sit on the door, on the front step or the stoop of where he had grown up, and how he had screwed up and didn't keep in touch with this kid, and the kid wound up dying from, I think, a drug overdose. Do you remember that part of his speech? Yeah, I thought that was, it's like, wow, you know, he admitted that he dropped the ball on that one. And it just showed how that deeply affected him. And in his own mind, he felt that he dropped the ball on it. And to me, I don't know, he just was looking and sounding presidential.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. And in a place like Netroots Nation, where you're surrounded by friendlies, the one thing you do want to do is press the flesh.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep. Whereas, I don't know, Warren, she gets kind of, I mean, didn't she kind of poo-poo you when you went to approach her about the AIC Act?
Oh, well, I mean, you never meet with the senator herself. The staffer in her office played with her hair during the meeting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
I mean, you're going to have that. But, Darlene, it has been a wonderful conversation. Again, thank you so very much. And we're going to fire up Friday on the Front Porch now.
All right. Enjoy. And hopefully I'll be able to listen in. All right, Bob, take care.
All right, I'll keep my fingers crossed for Frontier. I know what it's like. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye now.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
And that is Darlene, of course, in Connecticut. And we're not going to do any, no shenanigans with bumper music or anything, because apparently I can't play that right now. I've got a I got a boatload of work to do over the weekend to try to get all. I don't know. And the thing is, I don't know why the problem. Was it the cat? I can't imagine the cat can do that much damage. But yeah, there's a ton of work to be done, and please, I hope Darlene's appeal did not fall on deaf ears, because again, we got $250 worth of challenges on the table this evening, and a Moran Monday at 6:27, a Titanic Tuesday at 8:27, and pretty soon we're fresh out of radio network. This is independent. This is uncontrolled by advertising dollars or anything like that. And as a consequence, it's also uncensored. And when I say uncensored, I mean there's not anybody telling me don't say this. And by the same token, if you take advertising, they'll always say, well, our news division is entirely separate from our marketing department. Well, sure it is. But you know what? The people on air know the ads that are running in the breaks. And this is not a criticism. It's just a reality. You can't help but wonder if you're going to step on toes and how many millions of dollars that's going to cost if you do. When we first started this this effort, the very beginnings of this came with a little tiny sponsorship from the Mid-Atlantic Carpenters and Millwrights, a great organization doing great work. But if they were still supporting the program, would I have dared to bring up that story about the New Jersey Union carpenter last night who's gone off on numerous racist tirades on Facebook? Or would I, because there's a bunch of different stories out there. Or would I have just said, well, we'll just put that in the back of the stack and because other stuff. I don't have to do that because you support the program. And, with the exception of some cranky people who occasionally write in and say things like, why can't you run the network on $40 a month? Or, don't tax the Horn community to pay for your health care, Bob, just die. Or, silly shit like that. Nobody's telling me what to cover and what not to cover. And that's why something like Friday on the Front Porch is so important, because people can bring to the conversation things that they think are important. And, that obtains throughout the week, too. You got something to say, call the program and say it. And as long as you're not a right winger, because they're simply not allowed here, there's a forum to say it in. And it's as simple as that. Meanwhile, about 23 minutes before the hour, let's go over and check in with Sparky, who has waited patiently with the Friday group. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
You said it's 101 and a little smoky out there today?
Well, I went out and looked. It's not as smoky as the Weather Underground said. They said it was unhealthy. But I can see the foothills real clear as a bell.
Well, that's a little bit of a relief.
Speaking of foothills, you were talking about Agent Orange.
Yeah.
And you know damn good and well I know all about Agent Orange.
Oh, sure.
Well, I put a little picture in the chat and on the Skype chat of a mountain in. That's the end of the runway. You can see a B-52 and a 135 on the runway. B-52's landing. That mountain that was in the background there. Well, in 1972, some sappers came in, and a couple of them got on the base, and the Thai Marines killed them. But they were launching mortar strikes from that mountain. So right after that, they nuked that mountain with Agent Orange. When I got there, there was nothing growing on that thing.
Did it ever rain there?
Oh, yeah. Damn right it rains.
Well, I was just wondering where all the Agent Orange went when it rained.
Well, run down the mountain and went somewhere. Hopefully it didn't go into the tapioca plantations.
Oh, Jesus.
That were right off the base on the other side of the highway from where the base was. In case you never knew where tapioca comes from, that's where it comes from, Thailand.
Yeah, it's a starch or something, or isn't it?
Tapioca?
Yeah.
Well, they make pudding out of it.
Well, no, I mean, but it doesn't grow in those little tiny globules.
No, it doesn't. It grows in weird-looking plants. When I got there, I thought they were giant pot plants, but guys, some of that's tapioca.
Wow. But so did you ever have to deal with planes that had been loaded with that stuff
No, they came from other bases. But the rumors are all around. There's bases in Thailand. They now admitted that Agent Orange was on. I mean, guys, you know why they call it Agent Orange, don't you?
Before I make a fool of myself, why don't you tell me?
Because it was shipped in orange barrels.
Okay.
55-gallon drums that were orange.
Yeah, the dust, the defoliant itself was just a white spray, right?
Well, I never saw it, but they had like C-130s and other planes that sprayed it all over Vietnam, and they used it around the Air Force bases in Thailand. It finally admitted.
And so it's a serious discussion to this day, and yet it turns into a question about a movie that isn't even real. I mean, that's just frightening, Sparky. I mean, I remember, I remember when George Bush made fun of the fraudulent war in Iraq with his little White House Correspondents' Dinner video crawling under the coffee table. Hey, no weapons of mass destruction down there. That was just shitty. But what's going on now is terrifying. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day when I thought that having Count Dicula run the government quietly in the background was less terrifying than what we got now. I mean, I think the country's being run by an aggrieved little nerd who got a swirly every day of his life in high school in California, Stephen Miller.
Oh, geez, that guy.
Meanwhile, Clarence says, I was a guard at Utapau Air Force Base. I saw that mountain every day of my tour. And Clarence sent a note earlier. He said, I served in Vietnam and Thailand as a security policeman providing base security. Agent Orange was used to clear fields of fire for our bunkers and towers. I was exposed to that shit for 2 years. I'm going to the VA in Columbia, South Carolina every month to see if my pancreas issues are from that exposure. This war dodger, Trump, should have no input on any veteran issues whatsoever. I'm prepared, I'm perplexed, rather, at any veteran who supports this man. Yeah, meanwhile, a note coming in from Lee, worthy of a little jingle. Trump thinks Agent Orange is the one who hid Hillary Clinton's emails. Agent Orange also forced the Trump campaign to meet with the Russians. Agent Orange is the next to lose security clearance, making the intelligence agencies Trump again. That's funny, but it's not as funny as I wish it could be. By the way, just an update. I saw that you added Steve from Georgistan to the group, but Steve's a little under the weather right now, and so we will send all our good wishes, no prayers. Well, I mean, I guess some people do, but I don't. But for a speedy recovery to Steve from Georgistan, because he really is all around a great guy. So that's why he's not here this evening.
That's for sure.
I love the goodwill that he brings to the conversation. Well, let's check in with some other folks. Hey, Irwin, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, Bob. How are you?
You know, among those answering the call at the moment, among the quick, as the saying goes.
That's good. Yeah, I last week I was busy with family, but I was looking a little more at greenhouse gases. I've kind of got gas on the brain, I think. But anyway, I was talking last week about some figures from the EPA that came out that looked funny, and I still think they're funny. The units were wrong. They were carbon, but I had to search to find out. It was very misleading what they put. And I went through and looked at different countries in the European Union my cell phone just messed up, sorry. But anyway, I went through and looked at different countries, and the World Bank had a real good study in 2000 or 2012 about different countries and whatnot. And that was pretty good. They actually figured out what the greenhouse gases were in 1970 and then in 2012. And I looked at them, and I'll just go through the numbers, their numbers. Before I do that, though, it was very curious that Russian Federation has about the same rate of greenhouse gas production as we do. But the recent results that came from the EPA cut that in half. And that was about the only one besides Brazil was cut very drastically too. And I don't know why that is. But the numbers, the final number for the EPA number on Earth would be about 10,000 pounds CO2 per person. And with the World Bank, it's about 15,000. But I'll go quickly down. China is the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, but per capita, they're about 19,000 pounds. United States, about 43,000. The European Union is about 20,000. India is about 5,000. Russian Federation is just about the same as us at 43,000. Japan is about 26,000. Canada is the highest per capita. It's about 61,000 pounds per person there. Brazil is 31,000 pounds. Mexico is 11,000. And all the others lumped together is about 11 or about 12,000. So those are the numbers that I came up with for greenhouse gas production. And I just wanted to mention also, I looked at, I started thinking about the fires. And I looked through some data, looked through some data at what the carbon dioxide is released from a forest fire. And I looked at, there was a good article from Canada, and they show there, they gave an estimate there as the tons that comes from a fire. And using their figures, or using some figures I saw for California, if you would take the population of California and the fires that have gone in California this year, the greenhouse gases would be about 3,300 pounds per person in California. In the United States, each year, it's about 1,200 to 1,800 pounds per person per year. And usually this isn't considered because the forest comes back and grows. And the Canadian study said in 10 years, it will store that amount of carbon dioxide, carbon that was released in the fire. But that's 10 years time too, and a lot can happen in 10 years. So it's kind of a variable that that I don't think they're really considering very well, or they may not be, I don't know. But and there's also a thing about fire, and in itself it releases about twice as much water vapor as carbon dioxide, and water vapor is a greenhouse gas too, and it's never considered because it's so so much, there's so much in the environment that they don't consider it. But I did come across some people that were looking at it on the internet who are concerned and think it shouldn't be neglected. So the more I look at this, the more I'm no climate scientist, but I think there's a lot of variables that people don't understand. I really, you know, that's just my, that's my
but
guess.
The important thing, Erwin, is that if that's the case and there are unconsidered variables, they're not variables that make things better. They're variables that make things worse.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's what concerns me about it. So I can see how some of these climate scientists are really up in arms, you know, about what's going on. The more I look into it, basically one thing I wanted to say too is about the gas that's in your car. Most of it that's at the East E10 that has the methanol or ethanol in it. If you burn a gallon of it, it weighs about 6.3 pounds. When you burn it, it turns into about 17.6 pounds of carbon dioxide. So the oxygen is coming out of the atmosphere into the fuel. So if you think about filling a 12 gallon tank of fuel, that fuel will weigh about 75 pounds, but it'll produce about 250 pounds of carbon dioxide. So I never really thought of it that way until I started reading it. But you know, you're not creating matter, but it's basically being created from the atmosphere when you burn it. So that's one thing I wanted to get across. So, and that's about all I had, unless there's any questions. So thank you.
Fascinating information. Thank you, Erwin. Thank you very much. And we may come back to the topic at some later point. Let's see. Is Larry, are you there? Larry.
Hi, I'm here.
How you doing?
How are you?
I'm well.
I'm okay. Just kind of thought I would stop by and say hello for a little while. A school is starting here in Berkeley again. So everybody's gearing up, both at the community college and at UC Berkeley, for classes. The weather's nice. I keep on getting emails from various candidates asking for money. I don't know what's happening in Ohio with that race, although I hear it's very close. Then Heidi Heidkamp and Susan Del Benny send me emails asking for money, as well as a lot of the public interest groups that I subscribe to. And but generally speaking, I'm okay. I took a drawing class over the summer, so I kept myself busy.
I was going to mention that because I saw the examples of your work. Good for you.
Thank you. I worked hard, and I'll keep on going with it just to keep myself busy. And but other than that, there's not too much going on. I try to stay away from the incessant drone of the news all the time, because I get depressed. I really do get depressed, Bob. I really have a hard time maintaining my perspective. and realizing, maintaining some kind of perspective about what's going on in the world. It's very scary to me. So I try to find ways to.
That's why we laugh and clown around and carry on here and talk about food porn and the stupid things we found being offered for sale and who knows what. So you're always welcome here, Larry, and wander on by. And you know what? We change the subject. Sometimes you just can't stand to talk about Donald Trump anymore.
Well, I try to avoid him as much as I possibly can, but I've given up basically sitting there looking and saying that I don't understand how crazy people can be with their voting decisions. But, he didn't win. Hillary won. And why we didn't. Well, anyway, I'm going on and on now. I'm babbling on. But I hope everybody's doing well. And I just keep on hanging in there. That's about it.
Nobody can ask any more.
Do you know what's happening? Do you know what's happening in that race in Ohio? Or
frankly, no. There's a recount triggered, and all we can do is wait and see how it plays out. The latest piece of news that I saw is that. Commensurate with what Darlene was talking about a few minutes ago, the White House is now saying that, the White House, the geezer disgust us, is saying he's going to move very quickly to revoke the security clearance of Bruce Orr because someone has taught him his name, and he's convinced he's part of the rigged witch hunt.
Well. We just, I don't know, but we'll just have to, endure all this stuff. Aretha's gone, so that's pretty sad.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to let you go on to someone else. And
all right, stay in the background. If anything lights you up, holler.
All right, I'll let you know. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Dunk.
Is Tracy here?
Yes. Hi. How y'all doing? I'm at Ralph's. Your version of Kroger.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Never did get around to trying that lemon dill aioli. Just a little too close to mayonnaise, wasn't it?
Oh, Bob, I have to report. That I have been eating mayonnaise. See what happens when you're married to a white woman?
Oh my God. Next thing you know, there won't be any seasoning in your potato salad.
No, that's not going to happen. I would have to, if I did that, I would have to give up my black card. And I can't do that. There would be problems and no. There will always be seasoning.
So I don't know if you caught the front end of the program or not, Tracy, but if I show just a question, if I showed you a picture of Aretha Franklin mm-hmm. and a picture of Patti LaBelle,
mm-hmm.
I
would know the difference.
Could you say with 100% certainty that there is Aretha Franklin, Queen of Soul?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well,
why? Why?
Well, because the people at Fox News can't. I mentioned this at the top of the program, but I have to share it with you just because it's always so much fun for us to have conniptions together.
No.
In announcing the passing of Aretha Franklin, they ran a picture of Patti LaBelle.
Oh. They don't even have similar singing styles.
No.
They all look the same, though, don't they?
Well,
yeah, they do.
Fox. Jeez.
We're Fox Jesus News. They all
Christ.
Look the same to us.
Yeah.
We have a hard time. We have a hard time telling one from another. After all, our vision is impeded by these little pointy white pillowcase hats we wear.
Oh, so they got Aretha Franklin mixed up with Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, well, yeah, and, you know, Patti's still out there kicking ass and singing and...
Yeah, as a matter of fact, she's going to be on... I know you don't probably watch Greenleaf, but it's about a black mega church in Tennessee. And Patti LaBelle is going to have an arc on that show. So, yeah. She's still doing really well. I mean, there was a clip of her that I watched, yesterday as I was going online looking for stuff about Aretha. And it was Aretha, Patti LaBelle, and Gladys Knight. They were on the Oprah show. And they were talking about how old each other were. I think it was like in the late 90s. And of course, they're like, no, you're this age, because, you know, they all know each other and they've known each other for years, probably since they've been, you know, girls or whatever. And they're like, no, you're older. She's like, no, I'm the same age as you are. And, you know, nobody was really divulging how old they were, because I think Patti LaBelle's like, well, I'm 45. And Gladys Knight's like, no, but if, as long as you're 45, that means I'm 45, too.
Nice.
So she's like, so stay 45, baby, because if you're 45, that means I'm 45, because we're the same age. So Fox, between Fox News, I don't watch phone news because, like I said, I have a tenuous sometimes relationship with my sanity. So I can't do that to myself. I refuse to do that to myself, but I can't do it, you know, but every so often I'll get a clip, you know, you'll get a clip of something on Google and I'm like, oh my God. When Patti LaBelle died, Lord help me, when Aretha died or whoever, when there's a story and you look at the sources, you know, you'll see, you know, Variety, especially like Entertainment News, you'll see Variety, People, Entertainment Weekly, whatever. And then there's always, you know, the Fox News box that you can click. And I'm like, I think my phone would spontaneously combust if I ever clicked on the Fox News box to get any information whatsoever.
Well, let me break here because Steve in New York, I just got your email. You want to break the news? You want to break the news to Tracy, or shall I?
Who? Where's the sign?
Somebody got a mute. Or I'm going to mute you.
Okay.
It wasn't me. It's always me when there's a sound. Yeah, I'll break the news. Yes, I have just seen it. There is, or wait, let me get the
Tracy. Yeah, Tracy, listen up, because you can unmute and scream when this is all over. Go, Steve.
Yes, Hellman's has frozen over. Yes, Hellman's has frozen over. Mayonnaise ice cream is here.
What the entire fuck?
Only for you, Tracy.
Yeah. Okay. I will draw the line. Well, did you hear about, what is that, Sonic? The pickle juice slushy.
Now I drink me some pickle juice, but that's a slushy too far.
Come on.
But wait a minute. Which kind of pickle juice? Like the purple pickle juice for eggs and whatever, or
no,
and
sweet
beets?
Sweet pickle juice.
Oh.
Yeah.
I
no.
I could probably drink dill pickle juice.
Are you back? Hey, back before Gatorade, because I'm just that old. I think Gatorade came out or became, you know, widely available, like when I was in 10th grade. So when I was playing 9th grade freshman football, I'd come home from August football practice, and my mother'd be waiting there with a cold can of Kraut juice in the refrigerator, and it beat the living daylights out of Gatorade. Of course, that probably explains why.
That's just
why.
Nasty.
No,
that's
it is nasty. Not. Now quit that. And And I'm sitting here. I'm sitting here, and I've got I used part of it, but I've got another quart of pickle juice from Secret Sandwich Society. It's got three homemade chipotles in it and a bunch of smoky roasted garlic. And it will be and it will be the base of my next batch of barbecue sauce.
Well, that's okay. That's barbecue sauce, Bob. You know, you're not going to drink it out. Come on now. I mean,
I can't tell you the number of times that I have that I've just unscrewed the pickle jar and taken a big swig, especially in moments when perhaps I have overindulged on the previous evening. Because pickle juice is death to a hangover.
I want to talk, not me, you know, when I say white people, because, you know, my son being half white, he drinks, what is that, kombucha?
Oh, kombucha? Make him stop.
I mean, and we'll drink it, and he's like, come on, Mom, it's really good for you. And I'm like, you could give a damn.
That's some nasty shit. Now,
nasty shit.
I'll sign on with that.
I'm drinking some right now.
That's just nasty. That's, you know, I can't with you people right now. And that's it. You people.
You people, yes, absolutely. Oh, wait, I got a you people cowbell down here. Yeah, absolutely.
you people. But really, for real though, Hellman's mayonnaise ice cream.
Well, I mean, it's mayonnaise ice cream. I'm not, is it Hellman's, Steve?
There, but it's Best Foods out here.
It's from an ice creamery in Falkirk, Scotland.
You told me that I could shout in any time, and I just have to tell you,
yes,
that I think I've gotten sick. I've gotten sick for the last time, because you know how I feel about mayonnaise, and mayonnaise ice cream just doesn't. I mean, in this era of craziness, you can't be serious, Steve. Are you serious?
Yeah, I sent Bob the article.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. They're making it at a quirky ice cream shop in Falkirk, Scotland, where they make Monster Energy Drink ice cream and Strongbow Cider ice cream.
Remind me that I don't want to go to Falkirk, Scotland.
Hey, they're culinary adventurers in Scotland, Larry. I mean, these are the people who introduced the world to deep-fried Snickers, deep-fried Milky Ways, and deep-fried Three Musketeers, and deep-fried Mars bars.
Oh, that's where all this started coming from, that I started listening to on the chat when Duncan and other people were talking about the deep fried Snickers bars and stuff about 7 years ago. Oh, well, in any case, Tracy, I'm with you.
I mean, even white people have to say no to that. Come on.
Well, I have to tell you, you mentioned what the brand was out in California, and my first thought was when I saw this too was no matter how you spell the brand, for me it all spells delicious.
It might go good with artichokes.
Oh,
I just think it goes good by itself.
French fries, French fries, man. Damn it, French fries.
Wait! You eat mayonnaise out the jar?
Oh, I love mayonnaise.
Oh my!
I love mayonnaise on my artichokes.
Now wait a minute, but Steve, I thought I was the whitest man in the Horn Family Community Congregation because I burn under a refrigerator bulb. But Steve, you may have just surpassed me. You may be the whitest man in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Now I mean,
love mayonnaise.
Now if I'm slathering mayonnaise on a burger or something like that, yeah, I'll lick the spoon at the end of it, but. What was that noise?
I will tell you what.
That was Tracy just puking.
I will do you one better. My grandma used to make a mayonnaise cake.
Wait a minute. Those are good. Those just, you know, that's like a sour cream cake.
You don't taste the mayonnaise, but it makes it very moist. But it's,
well, First of all, I'm with Tracy, and I'm sick to my stomach, and I would hope that we would not discuss this any further, because Tracy, I'm with you. I can't deal with it at all.
Yeah, I put it on everything. I put it on hot dogs. I put it on, like, if you eat an egg sandwich with, like, scrambled eggs and cheese, I'll put it on there.
Oh, well, like I said, it's so funny because it's been so damn hot in L.A. We haven't been eating a lot of hot food, cooking, you know. And mm-hmm. so we've been eating a lot, you know, going to the deli and getting the Boar's Head deli meat and cheese for dinner. And
that's good stuff.
Yes. And so I was making sandwiches for Jan and I, and she came in the kitchen and, you know, she tells me what she wants on her sandwich, and I was making the sandwiches, and she's like, is that my sandwich? And because I put mayonnaise on the bread, and she's like, is that mine? I'm like, actually, no, it's mine. And she just looked at me, and she's like, wait, what? Because Jan and I have been together now for 6 years, and, you know, just the very thought of mayonnaise on anything. I mean, no, let me backtrack. Now, when I make my potato salad and stuff like that, I use mayonnaise. Oh, sorry, here comes another siren. Let me mute.
Thank you.
Well, and having mentioned potato salad, then the next question obtains, I think it was Marty who asked it. Doesn't Tracy use mayo with her tuna salad? What about ham salad, macaroni salad?
I like to mix Dijon mustard and mayonnaise. Oh, and
yes.
Dip my French fries in it.
Yes.
Or dip sourdough hard pretzels in it.
Well, see, the other day I put up a picture. I tried to attempt my own version of a New Orleans-style hot sausage po' boy. I grilled the New Orleans-style hot sausage and slathered the inside of the baguette, which was also nice and toasty and somewhat hollowed out, with a mixture of mayo and Dijon mustard. That was freaking fabulous. And dill pickle slices and sweet onion and tomato and everything but lettuce. Really not a lettuce fan these days.
Yes, I did something I'd never done before this year. When I moved here, there's the Western Montana Fair here, so I entered four culinary things in the fair, and I came out with four third places. So one of them was a jambalaya pie that I kind of adapted a recipe to it. My diet, I've gotten so I'm one of those freaks that can't eat gluten anymore. So I don't eat gluten and I don't eat any dairy. So I had to make the pie gluten-free, dairy-free. And then I made a pear pie, and that I got a third, and then some sourdough bread.
Oh, pear pie sounds really good.
It is really good. I was after the fair, the items, the two pies were, they had a refrigerator and they had the pies in there, and I went to get them and they were gone. And they said they got moldy, but I just wondered if somebody took
my
pie.
I'm not buying that.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Bob, would you introduce me to Erwin? This is the first I've met him.
Erwin? Larry? Erwin.
Hi,
Erwin. Larry.
There you go.
How are you? How's Western Montana? My brother likes to go there to visit. What's it like there?
It's nice here. We're kind of in kind of like John. It's a blue dot in Montana here, so it's kind of progressive place, liberal arts college here. This area is really nice. Fishing's good. There's skiing right outside of town. We had some bad fires last year, but this year's been pretty good right in this area, though. North around Glacier Park, it's been bad up there. But there's the Clark Forks River that runs right through Missoula here, and I'm right on the banks of it. So it's kind of a pretty place. It's a nice place.
Oh, I was just going to ask you whereabouts in Missoula or whereabouts in Montana are you? You just said Missoula. That's where the University of Montana is.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's.
All those little things that music has taught me over the years are when I first heard of Missoula, because of a Jimmy Buffett song.
Yep.
I guess it all blew up in Missoula. There was nothing left to say. After months of going crazy, there was no other way. And when the dust had finally settled and the air had quickly cleared, oh, things were better off than I had feared. A song called Miss You So Badly.
Yeah, he started here, but he was here. And there's also Livingston Saturday night. That's about Livingston.
And Livingston's gone to Texas. And some of that has to do with the fact that I guess he was friends with, what was his name? It was a well-known Montana author, Larry something.
Yeah. Okay. The Rivers Run Through? Not that.
Maybe,
Rivers Run Through. I just read his book, and I can't think of his name right now. But there's the Rivers Run Through. There's Brad Pitt, and somebody else was in that movie. It's probably in the 90s, and it was the writer for that lived here. And it's kind of about this area. The guy, he was a fisherman, and he gambled. Got into gambling and ended up getting killed.
Wasn't Larry something? I was on a race there because I wanted to beat the Horn Family Community Congregation to the email punch. Thomas McGuane.
Oh, okay. Well, that could be. I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah, I guess he married Buffett's sister.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, Buffett. He must have got tired of Montana and moved to the Keys, but the winters are a little better down there.
he's richer than God, so he may still maintain a home up there. So
there's a lot of people, a lot of celebrities around here. Some of them aren't really well liked. Some are. I know, my ex-sister-in-law, she's in Red Lodge, which is away from here, but there's a ski lodge there, and what's his name? The guy, Mel Gibson, used to come up there and ski all the time.
Ew.
And so that was back when nobody knew that much about him, and he was decent, but I guess he'd come and ski in jeans. He didn't just jeans and didn't dress up or anything. So, and then there's north of here around Whitefish. What's his name? Chuck, the just went off the air. David Letterman. He lives up there part time. My brother. But Peter Fonda's lived down in Montana for years and years. There's others. It was a big thing for a long time with celebrities to have a ranch or have a place up here. So I don't know where, if it's still that way or not, but it's kind of the way it's been. Now, I'm from eastern Montana. Nobody wants to live there, but but western Montana's different.
Yeah, eastern Montana is pretty much just North Dakota, isn't it?
Kind of like that, yeah. It's there's bad lands. The little town where I'm from is There's a lot of pine trees. It's really a pretty place, but it's isolated. Probably one of the most isolated places in the 48 state, or in the 40, lower 48. There wasn't a paved highway north-south through that county until about 10 years ago. Barack Obama, when he put the money in to spur the economy, I forget what the term is, the money that he put into went for that road. And to this day, none of the right-wingers in my family will acknowledge that he did that. I mean, that was was fighting for that road for years and years, and then Obama came in, and it was finished within a year. I've never heard him say a word about it. So,
Irwin, which county is that?
It's called Carter County. It's the southeastern corner of the state. It's very small.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's not, like they say, it's not the end of the earth, but you can see it from there. So it's very isolated, and it's unique. The people are really unique there. That Montana is a different place. I wish it would turn blue, but other than that, it's pretty decent. We do have a good governor. Our governor is a...
You got one halfway decent senator.
Yeah, Tester. Yeah. Tester, he just had a concert here. My name recalling isn't very good tonight. I'll think of the name, but the drummer is from his hometown. This is a very famous famous band, and I'll think of it later. But they had a benefit concert here just the other night and filled the stadium. So Tester he doesn't need money, though. He has like $15 million or something like that to run on in Montana. So he's got all the money he needs. So I expect him to win. I don't think I don't think he'll lose. So
we can't lose any Democratic senators, no matter how good or bad they are. Witness the conundrum of, you know, me and Joe Manchin.
Because
it looks like, you know, that there's less than 10 points between him and Patrick Morrissey, so that's going to trigger the I have to hold my nose and vote for Joe Manchin problem. Let me just update folks. We've got a bunch of challenges on the table this evening, and time running out to fulfill them. Just heard from Robert in Australia, who said with a note, this is a $75 challenge to add to the other challenges. Hopefully some will match. I had to pay my compulsory third-party car insurance, my pink slip for the car and for a service on the car yesterday and the day before, but lo and behold, I've got some money left over, so here it is. Bills? Yuck. Robert from Australia. So that means that there are now $325 worth of challenges on the table and awaiting responses. Thank you very kindly last night to Karen in California and this evening to Ralphs for responding there. That's all the responses we've had to the challenges, though. $325 on the table, and now added to that, Billable Rick, you've got a challenge of your own?
Yeah, I certainly do, Bob. Let me summarize it here. As many of the Horn listeners are aware of, I live in the entertainment capital of the world here in LA, and I have a passion for attending live music. Since the end of last year and this year, I've seen, you know, various acts such as, let me see the email here. What did I say here, Bob? Let's see here.
Al Stewart, Stevie Wonder, Jackson Brown, U2, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Bad Company, The Outlaws, Chicago REO Speedwagon, various bands at the Arroyo Seco Festival in Pasadena, The Revolution, The Pretenders, Alanis Morissette, Neil Young, Jack White, and Robert Plant. Good God, what a list. The Go-Go's, Chris Isaak, Mickey Dolenz, and Mike Nesmith of the Monkees. The Bangles, Ann Wilson, Paul Rogers, Jeff Beck, Jeff Lynne, ZLO, Pat Benatar, and Neil Giraldo, and Alice Cooper, Ace Frehley. By the way, was Ace, I got to ask you, was Ace sober for that?
Yeah, he was. He was pretty good. It was fun. It was entertaining. So this is the deal here, Bob. You know, every time I go to a concert, I, you know, record about an hour of each act, okay, on very high quality audio video. And I take numerous still photos on an Android smartphone that my fellow concert goers tell me has the best damn picture they've ever seen. And, you know, really the next best thing to being at these concerts of these awesome performers, and in many cases, Hall of Fame performers, is to see it from the vantage point of me, Billable Rick. And so to help stanch the summer fundraising doldrums, I'd like to propose the following gift package to the first 10 Horn listeners who respond by contributing $50 to the program. You can choose two of the concerts I've described, and I suppose we could even throw in Tom Petty, okay, may he rest in peace, as well, as one of the choices.
And understand, you're not selling anything here. These are strictly gifts.
Strictly gifts, exactly, yep. So if you choose two of these concerts, or one in the case of the two-day Arroyo Seco Festival, I will put on a thumb drive the two concerts, send it to you with a set list. It's not necessarily going to be all of the songs on the show, of course. And I will send you the best still photos of the show. So just give your name and address to Bob. I'll get a package to you within 7 to 10 days. And rock on, y'all, and pony up to keep this program on the air.
Well, thank you, Billable Rick. That is awesome. And I know for a fact, because I've been the recipient of your largesse, your videos are really cool. And the audio quality is pretty surprisingly good, too. So everybody that responds to the tune of to the tune of $50, send me your mailing address. I'll send it to Billable Rick. Billable Rick will then get it to you. Much the same as with the offer for a Punky Feather, which is also out there. So with the challenges that are on the table and offers like this, theoretically we should be able to clear out the fundraising the fundraising deficit if people are willing to respond. And you know, this, well, hopefully that'll happen. That's all I can say. But beyond that, I want to hear the Alice Cooper, Ace Frehley, was that a pretty good show?
Oh, damn. Alice Cooper, even though he's a major Trumpanzee, at least that's what I've heard, he puts on a great show. He's like 70 years old. And it's like, you know, with his costume changes and all the theatrics and everything else, it's like going to a Broadway play, you know, in terms of the elaborate nature of it. I mean, he's kind of a throwback to the old time rockers.
Well, I mean, he kind of invented that with the whole guillotine shtick and the hanging shtick. And
yeah, he did that. He did
as
that.
A young,
he
as
brought
a,
up, yeah. He, yeah. Yeah. He brought out the electric chair for, you know, Feed My Frankenstein. And there was like a 12-foot Frankenstein that was like marauding around on the stage. They put him in a straitjacket at one point and then gave him the guillotine. It was the whole nine yards. Fire, flames, smoke.
Was that the guillotine, was that for Welcome to My Nightmare?
You know, he didn't do Welcome to My Nightmare.
No.
No, he didn't. He didn't. I was surprised. I thought he would, yeah. But he did pretty much everything else. I mean, he sounds great still, you know, and he's like, you know, God love him, he's 70, and it's just a lot of fun, you know. I think he even did I'm guessing it's a Beastie Boys song or maybe a Weezer song. It kind of goes like, I don't have a girlfriend because I don't have a job. I don't have a car because I don't have a job. I don't go to school because I don't have a gun. I'm not sure what it was called, but it was a kick. And then Ace Frehley played pretty well. I think the guy who had the best voice was his drummer, who sang, what is that? The Detroit song? What is that?
Detroit Rock City.
Yeah, Detroit Rock City. So that was really good. That was really good. It was a lot of fun. I took my son with me. So, it was a great show. And then,
well, you know, the number of septuagenarian rockers that are out there touring makes you wonder if the hard partying, hard charging lifestyle that was presented to us on the in the pages of various and sundry magazines back in the era before the internet. It might have been a little bit, dummied up by the publicity industry, because how could they have survived that long? I mean, except for Keith Richards. Everything Keith Richards did was true.
Well, yeah, Keith, I mean, you know, he always used the purest heroin, right? So, you know, just use the best stuff and you're fine. No, I don't recommend that to anybody, actually. Yeah,
no, not at all.
That's one line I'll draw. And then the night before, I saw Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo at the at a free concert in downtown L.A. I was like real close to the stage, like probably about 50, 60 feet, something like that. And boy, she still has a set of pipes. She still sounds great. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun in downtown L.A. At Pershing Square. So,
anything on the burner this weekend?
Well, you know, I had tickets to see Smash Mouth and the Spin Doctors, and my girl decided she was kind of concerted out for a while, so I actually gave those away to a couple members of my nine ball team, which won first place in the league
in the pool hall with the slanted floors. Yes.
Yeah, there you go, exactly. And we have our next, we won the first round of the playoffs a week ago Wednesday, and we have our next round this coming Wednesday. So
yeah, I'm just intrigued by the idea of playing billiards and having to read the bays like a golfer reads a putting green, see which way it's going to break.
Well, yeah, our pool table, they recently refelted it at our home bar or whatever, and you know, it kind of goes a little bit slow at times, and it doesn't have that much of a table roll. It's actually pretty good, but I played at another table where they had glue like around the pockets, you know, so you could actually hit a ball. And it, you know, it looked like it would be for sure a scratch, but if it slowed down enough, it would like almost do like a 360-degree rotation and not go in.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I want to make sure that we make all the rounds. Mike in Cascadia has tried to get in a couple of Fridays and actually managed to make it in this time. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah. Hey, I'm here. Can you hear me, Bob?
Loud and clear, man.
Okay. I'm new to this Skype thing, so.
Well, so far you're doing great.
So far, so good, yeah. So I had some anecdotal evidence to add to the whole rotten in Denmark comment the other day that was on Fox News.
Oh, beautiful.
We just spent, got back a couple weeks ago. We were in Scotland for 5 days and then about a week in Oslo, Norway. So I got to say, in Oslo, my daughter, she's been on a club soccer team, so this was kind of her final hurrah at soccer. They played in it's called the Norway Cup. So in Oslo, the tournament they were in, it's the biggest youth tournament in the world, and there are like over 2,000 teams there. So we're just hanging out in Oslo, and well, occasionally the girls would have the soccer matches, so we had a lot of time in between to kind of check out the city, and I never once saw a traffic jam, and their transit system's insane. They have overground trams. They have an underground, like, subway system. They have a great bus system. And the people walking around and just everywhere, everybody seems just really, really happy. And so, I mean, I never saw any big monster trucks blowing coal. So, I mean, just from my week in Norway, I'd say they're doing something right over there.
What about electric car stations, charging stations?
Yeah, saw a lot of those. Saw a lot of the little BMWs. What's that little model car they have? Saw a lot of Teslas. Saw a lot of solar panels on the houses.
And then you come, back here and find out that lo and behold, they really are going to sell off the unprotected parts that they carved out of Grand Staircase.
Yeah, that's pretty discouraging. I saw a map today. I think it was on the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance site, and they showed a map of the parcels that are getting sold, and they're pretty much wrap around. You know that there's a Utah state legislator has been instrumental in pushing that whole thing. His name is Mike Noel, but a bunch of the land around his parcel is what's getting sold. So, and he was quoted in a Huffington Post article and elsewhere saying that he didn't know about it. So yeah, right. yeah. So the BLM, they're racing forward with that plan, and their plan is to open up Grand Staircase was about 2 million acres, so they're opening up about 1 million acres to resource extraction. Coal mining, there's...
Or we could just say destruction.
Yeah, destruction. There's tar sands, there's copper, there's just all kinds of resources in there that they want to get to. And then they said also they want to open up a off-road vehicle park right next to Escalante. Like a 2,500 acre off-road vehicle park, pretty much unlimited, where you could kind of go rip roaring around anywhere and everywhere. One thing that's interesting is most of the locals there in Escalante that I've talked to over the years, they always diss on Moab because Moab has turned into just such a, it's overcrowded. It's packed with all kinds of different, there's hikers and climbers and rafters. And then there's the ORV crowd, and it's just always super busy. The prices have gotten ridiculous. And the people in Escalante have always said they don't want to become the next Moab. But it seems to me that this plan is almost like they're trying to turn Escalante into a Moab.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. You know, especially if they can put some frack pads and some great big blasted moonscapes into it. You know, why not? Hey, if y'all don't mind, continue the conversation. Agnes just hollered for me. I need to run in into the rest of the mansion for a second. I'll be back.
Okay.
Rick, I was just going to mention that Alice Cooper is going to be here this weekend, I think.
Oh, that's very cool. If you have a chance, get to see.
I had the choice of him or Blondie, and Blondie's here the 4th of September, and I got tickets for Blondie instead of Alice.
Oh, well, maybe you can just show up at the Cooper concert and get like a cheap ticket at the you know, last minute or something, because it's quite a spectacle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, he sounded great.
That's good, yeah. I also remembered that Pearl Jam played here. I think their bass player is from the same hometown as Tester, our senator.
Oh, okay.
So they go way back, friends and everything. So that's why they came here and played. But
Pearl Jam played a benefit concert for
here
for Tester.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, in the stadium, I think they got 10,000-15,000 people. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good. I'm trying to remember the guy, the lead singer, Eddie Vedder. He's a real good guy, I think, a real good Democrat. And, he loves the Chicago Cubs. He's played at Wrigley Field a couple of times. I've never seen Pearl Jam, though, but I think he does his own stuff sometimes, you know?
Uh-huh, yeah.
He goes on his own tours sometimes. But, I've got I'm pretty much out of concerts for this week. I mean, I felt good about giving those tickets away because these guys wouldn't normally have gone to a concert, and they're going to like it. You know, Smash Mouth, Spin Doctors, two pretty good 90s groups. You know, I don't have anything going on the rest of August, but I've got the Eagles on September 12th and Johnny Rivers, the second row seat for September 30th.
Well, Johnny Rivers still playing.
I think he sounds good still. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing how long these guys are lasting. Actually, today is Robert Plant's 70th birthday.
Wow.
I don't know if anybody knew that, but you know, Yeah, he's playing at a, you know, the other concert I might go to, I take that back. My girlfriend told me about a concert lineup in San Diego. Oh, I may see Justin Hayward on September 8th as well at a small club. Maybe it seats maybe 500 or less, you know, in Pasadena. So that'll be good. That'll be good. And then there's this concert in San Diego called Kabu. It's actually Del Mar. I don't know. Maybe our buddy Scott, you know, he may or may not know about it. But the headline acts on Friday night are the Foo Fighters, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
I like Blondie. Blondie's going to play, as is Halsey, Incubus, Jimmy Eat World, Nelly, Tower of Power, Everclear, The Zombies, The English Beat. And then on Saturday, Imagine Dragons is the big, is the main band. And then the secondary bands are like Earth, Wind & Fire, Billy Idol, Cake, Stone Temple Pilots, Melissa Etheridge, The Wailers, Soul Asylum. Let's see what else here. Okay, and then the third day, the headliners are Katy Perry and Robert Plant. And then Alice in Chains, All American Rejects, they're a good band. War, they're really good. Elvin Bishop, let's see, turn my light on here. So that's about it. So I'm going to pick maybe one night. That's on, what day is that? The hell is it? Sometime in September, I think. I forget when exactly. I better figure this out here. But
really have a lot of choices.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. Is it's like I sort of ran out of funds, so I had to, you know, decide to like, okay, you can't do everything, Rick. You know, and it killed me to give away tickets, but I had to because you know. Rick doesn't always get his way. Rick is not king, you know. He's got to, like, go along with what Star wants to do sometimes, you know?
Well, it's interesting, Rick. I just wanted to chime in for a second. It's interesting that a lot of these bands, and a lot of these big shows, they're not necessarily theme-related. You used to be able to go to a show, and the bands would be theme-related, and now you've got potpourri of different styles for all, you know, for all these shows. I'm amazed at all the shows that you've been to see and all that you know about and all that you follow as far as music is concerned, because I haven't really been following it that much.
Right.
I know all the names, but I just haven't been following it. But sure. I hope you enjoy seeing Justin Hayward. That ought to be a really nice show. The thing about Alice Cooper is that he became a major right winger, or actually he became a born again Christian and then became a right winger. I don't understand all that, the you know, the ins and outs of all that, but that's what happened with him.
It's funny that you mentioned he became a born again, because it's like he has he dresses really goth, you know. He's got like black eyeshadow, like teardrops, black eye, you know, like tears, you know. And he dresses so goth, you know, and the themes are so dark. I mean, it's obviously a shtick for him, you know, but, you know, and actually there were a couple of really good guitarists there who were in his band. There's this female guitarist, this blonde lady, and just, she really shreds it. There's actually two female guitarists, both blondes. One was a little bit better than the other, but they were really, you know, very good musicians, you know? So,
well, Well, and
I, it was at the Great Theater. I was smack dab in the center of the facility. So I wasn't like right on the front row or anything, or the front sections, but I was like toward the front of like the middle section, let's say. So, you know,
the gentleman that came in from a Utah, I don't know if he's still on, but gentleman that came in from,
Utah. Yeah. Mike in Cascadia.
Oh yeah.
I'm still here.
Yeah. Mike's still here.
Moab used to be, didn't it used to be a counterculture kind of town back in the 60s and 70s?
I'm not familiar with that, Larry. I know it used to be, they had a, I know because I've rented once there. We were staying there for, we were mountain biking down there, and we rented a trailer house, and they said it was from uranium miners back in the probably the 70s. So I know they've always kind of had hot and cold uranium prospecting down there. So,
well, Ron in Raleigh just mentioned something, Mike. He said Ryan Zinke also owns a parcel next to Noel's plot where he wants to build a brewery.
Really? Serving 3.2% beer in Utah there?
I guess. I mean,
that would be good. That's
going to be kind of the antithesis of a stout now, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all they allow in Utah, 3.2%?
Yes, that's correct.
That's crazy. Who the hell wants to drink that?
And they just lowered their DUI limit down to 0.5. It's the lowest in the nation.
Oh, geez. Well, I have a message to all you drunks out there. Stay the hell away from Utah.
Yeah, but you're going to have to throw back a hell of a lot of 3.2 beer to get to 0.05, aren't you?
Yeah,
that's going to take work.
You know, Bob and Rick, I was in Walgreens, which is a major drugstore chain. You know, I was in a large one, and they're now selling alcohol meters. You can buy an alcohol meter. I guess it's for the people that want to go out and drink and they want to check their alcohol level before the police get to them. Is that what that's about, or what do you think?
That's a good idea.
Idea. As long as it's accurate, you're supposed to be able to tell when you're okay to be behind the wheel and when you're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's good from the standpoint of both public safety to keep drunks off the road, and from your standpoint, as far as financial, because if you get a drunk driving ticket, it's about $10,000. You know, the fine and hiring an attorney and everything else, at least out here in California it is. And most folks can't afford that much, you know?
Well, without a doubt, yeah.
It's just not worth it, you know?
So I wanted to ask Dunk how he's doing, because I haven't talked to him in a while. I hope he's okay. Dunk, I hope you're okay.
I'm fine, Larry.
Okay, good.
Nothing happening here except heat.
You know, I talk to Charles on a regular basis, you know, once a week or twice a week. And I go into the chat with Greg Ward and those people, but, you know, that chat's changed, so... In any case, I just haven't talked with you, so I wanted to say hello. And
yeah, because I don't do the Friday night group anymore. I just do this group.
Duncan, do you guys still have smoke around you in California?
Yeah, it's not as bad where I'm at right now.
Here in the northwest corner of Washington, it's been really thick, but we had a... it's coming down from Canada, but it's today a nice breeze came in, so it's clear, pretty clear again here.
Earlier I posted a picture that was just a video that was just released, kept from Cal Fire, of the fire tornado that ripped through Redding. It was just come out yesterday or the day before. Cal Fire releases. Oh man, the thing was a monster. It's up in the chat, and I don't know if you can see it. Came in too late.
Yeah, I can't see that.
Wasn't it like a rated a 3 or something like that?
EF3 tornado.
Yeah.
It was a 1,000 feet at the bottom, had winds up to 165 miles an hour, and the smoke column rose 15 miles up into the air.
Wow.
Is that pictures of the two planes, or is that from your combat days, Sparky, you posted earlier in the chat? US Air Force?
That's an iconic picture from Utapau.
That's
the mountain I was talking about. That was before they nuked it with Agent Orange.
Oh, geez.
When I was there, it was completely no foliage on it.
Yeah, defoliated, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron and Raleigh pointed out a little bit ago when we were talking about that whole Agent Orange stories. He said, "I bet you a whole bunch of veterans will vote for Dolt 45." Did you? And speaking of which, did you see that when the bikers showed up at his tacky little awful golf club in New Jersey? Did you see the close up that was done of one of the bikers that was with him?
With the SS symbol.
Yeah. Yeah. The photo Trump took was real creepy. He had his shoulders on the back of one of the guys looking like he was going to do something, you know, God only knows, you know, like what he'd like to do to, you know, Ivanka maybe. I don't know. But they did a close up of one of the bikers and he had his Bikers for Trump sticker on. But there was also a close-up of the ink that he had on his arm, and lo and behold, right there on the inside of his forearm was the Nazi Schutzstaffel, the lightning bolt SS symbol. Yeah, kind of hard to miss. So
did you hear that the Trump baby balloons have shown up, and they're going to fly them in New Jersey this weekend?
That's awesome.
Good.
That really pissed him off in London, I think. He had a hard time with that.
You know, honest to God, I think I'm a little worried about Omarosa, because you know, Julius Geezer has been saying, "I want Jeff Sessions to arrest her." Well, there's really not much to arrest her for.
Yeah.
Unless she succeeds in giving him a stroke. And, you know, controlling somebody so much that he has a stroke, could that be considered a criminal act?
I think it would be called justifiable homicide.
I think that's just an act of God, Bob.
Yeah, act of God from the guy who gets mad at me on prayer meeting Wednesday. I love you, Sparky.
You know what, man?
Oh yeah, I do. Remember, Agent Fred? I'm just asking. I'm asking for academic purposes, but you wonder, because now what's the number? She says she's got 200 tapes or 200 separate recordings, and Laura Trump got real mad at her today. And Eric Trump tweeted, "I hate disloyalty," and the entirety of Twitter just landed on him like a ton of bricks. Going, you mean like when a guy is married to one woman and has an affair with another woman, and then when he marries the second wife, he has the affair with the third wife, and then when he marries the third wife, he has an affair with a Playboy playmate while she's pregnant with his fifth kid by his third wife? Yeah, we hate that too.
Well, John Brennan's going to be on Rachel Maddow tonight.
Oh, good.
Well, yeah. Hey, I've got a little bit of an update. This is inspiring. I had a note from Les saying he would kick in, so that took us down to of the original three challenges, that took us down to 2:30 to go. Darlene, who sponsored a challenge of her own just a couple of nights ago, just chimed in based on what she had said earlier and wiped out the rest of Larry and Liberalville's challenge. and then $70 of Chris's challenge. And then Anatole jumped in and knocked down the rest of Chris's challenge and $70 of Laborman's challenge. So now there's $30 left of Laborman's challenge and $75 more from Robert in Australia. And that would actually constitute, in the last 6 minutes before the program ends, a genuine, bona fide, no kidding, community-made Friday on the Front Porch miracle.
Awesome.
So good. That's pretty astonishing.
And just so you know, Bob, just for your listeners, the Rock Out with Bill O'Rourke gift challenge will be in force for the rest of this month.
Okay. Right? Wonderful. And I presume that the... what should we call the Punky Challenge? It will remain in effect for a little while too. So we're making real progress. So thank you very much for the ongoing offer, and that can run concurrent. You know, we'll have Larry and Liberalville's challenge continuing into next week too. So between those three. Maybe we won't be quite so beat up at the end of next week as we were at the end of this week. So, if we can raise the remaining $105, we will pretty much have knocked out the fundraising deficit that we came into this week with. By the way, just before we go out the door, one of the more serious notes. Did you catch the story where Judge T.S. Ellis says he's received death threats over the Manafort trial, and that he has enhanced U.S. Marshal protection, and that was his reason for not turning over the jury list to the media? Kind of makes you. Bless his heart. If it had been a bunch of liberals threatening him, I'm sure he would have said it. The story that I'm looking at doesn't indicate. And for the most part, death threats generally come from the white wing these days, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's kind of surprising because he expressed a whole lot of support for Trump earlier on, you know, when he said this is just an effort to, you know, to try to get Trump. You're not interested in Manafort, you know. What are you doing here? And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a bit of a Schadenfreude factor there, Bob, because I mean, when you sleep with dogs, you get fleas. I mean, he's basically he's a full bore Trumpansie.
Oh, Ellis has been an extra lawyer for Manafort in this trial.
Absolutely. I mean, he's bent over backwards. So it's like, I don't know why these. Well, I guess they're making death threats because that's what the Nazis do, you know. You know, they try to limit speech. They try to suppress speech. So, you know, I can't say that I'm that surprised. But, I mean, this is the crowd he's thrown in with. So, from that standpoint, I can't say I feel sorry for the guy. I mean, I don't want anything bad to happen to him, obviously, Agent Fred. But, you know, that's who he is. That's who his peeps are, you know.
Well, and let me ask you this: you'll have some experience with this, Rick. If you destroy evidence in a civil case, can that become a criminal violation?
I think so. Yeah, I think it can be.
Because Alex Jones has been deleting posts from his InfoWars site.
Oh.
That relate directly to the harm he is alleged to have caused to the parents of the Sandy Hook victims. You know, he's a total sleazebag.
He is.
Bob, yeah. Before you go, I don't know how. I've always thought that Alex Jones was kind of a Rush Limbaugh type of clone, but people tell me that some people have told me that he can go any way the wind blows. What kind of a person is here? Well, where is he coming from?
In his heart, he's a con artist and a white, but he's mostly white wing, because that's where the money is. There was a time years ago when you could hear him almost sound like he might be working this side of the street, but he's committed himself pretty much exclusively to the white wing at this point, because they're the ones who are willing to follow him. At one point in time, you know, when George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush were talking New World Order stuff, he jumped on that as if he was opposed to them. But the fact of the matter is, he's a right wing paranoid. And his primary allegiance is to various and sundry conspiracy fascinations and an absolute fetish for firearms.
He fits in perfectly in Trump America, Bob.
Yeah. But the father of one of the victims of Sandy Hook has pled via, I guess, motion practice in the case against Jones that the deletion and the removal of his Sandy Hook hoax posts constitute a destruction of evidence. And the argument being made is that that constitutes a loss of evidence and should be subject to sanctions being imposed against Jones.
Yeah, I think the most I think the most likely effect will be sanctions. Like it might even result in a a verdict against, like kind of the equivalent of a directed verdict against Alex Jones, and then it would just amount to a matter of what the damages are. If it involves spoiling evidence as to a crime scene, okay, then that clearly is a crime. Like if Mark Furman really did plant a glove at OJ's Hout mansion or whatever, then yeah, he would be subject to criminal penalties. I mean, I don't really think he did, but you know, who the hell knows? He's a Klansman, so anything's possible. I'm not saying OJ was innocent, okay? believe me,
that's where you get into trouble, is when you run into these hyper-zealous cops who want to help things along the way.
That's true.
Try to make it a little more airtight, a little more lead pipe cinch.
right, yeah, exactly.
And Darlene reminds us, T.S. Ellis is a hypocrite. Don't forget, he forced Mueller to release the names of the five witnesses that he requested immunity for testifying. He didn't care about their safety, now did he? Bit of an a priori approach there until it hit him directly now, huh, says Darlene.
And oh, I agree. Yeah, yeah, Darlene.
Because, of course, I'm surprised he didn't come out and say, oh, I got it from Antifa. That would have been par for the course for him.
Indeed. I mean, I always want to call him like T.S. Eliot, but it's just Ellis, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, T.S. Eliot's a famous author. What is it, The Jungle, or what was that?
No, T.S. Eliot, poet.
Poet, okay. There
yeah,
you go.
The love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, among other things.
Okay.
Which poem still pisses off our buddy Joy in Ann Arbor to no end. Ruined poetry for Joy, she told me.
Yeah, murder of the cathedral, I think, as well.
Yeah, about the assassination of the murder of Thomas A. Becket. Well, that being the case, we've gone over just a little bit. Let us go then, you and I, as the evening is set out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table. Let us go through the muttering retreats and half-deserted streets, and that's the beginning of Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. See what you guys do to me?
There you go.
Thanks, everybody. Great conversation this evening. Thanks for joining in. Good to hear from you, Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Billable Rick. Good to hear from you, Tracy. Thank you, Larry, for being here. Thanks, Irwin. Thanks, Steve in New York. Thanks, as always, Sparky for hosting and moderating Friday on the front porch. So look, here's my hope. One, we'll knock down the last, $105 of the challenges. Two, I'll get these audio gremlins sorted out between now and Monday, and we'll start Monday with just a fresh fundraising goal and a challenge courtesy of Larry and Liberalville on the table, and we'll go from there. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going for the entire community. Thanks to the entire community for sharing your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room and for the moderation of the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan. I hope you're feeling better, and I hope you get better real quick. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.